Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
The NCAA.
The great NCAA.
The NCAA made this rule, which, appropriately enough, is called the... what's the name rule?
The Rich Paul rule. I think LeBron named it that. The NCAA didn't name it.
But basically the rule is saying, and maybe you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, that anyone who wants to now represent college players or who want to test the waters, there are new regulations they've got to have, right? They got to have a college degree, which of course Rich Paul does not have.
Right.
Right. And I think the other thing, I think you got to take a test.
Right, you have to go to Indianapolis to take a test at the NCAA headquarters. They want 10 years of your, addresses of where you've lived. You have to have 3 years in the NBA, PA, as part of the association in terms of being an agent.
It's being good standing, there, right?
Yeah, he's fine there. Exactly. I think he's fine except for the college degree. So So they announced that. And then LeBron James, pretty quickly that day, tweeted out, "Oh, it's the Rich Paul rule because he doesn't have a college degree. They don't want him. They're trying to box him out. He's too powerful now." So that was LeBron, and then that story just took on a mind of its own.
What do you guys think? I mean, first thing I thought was exactly that. Not just Rich Paul,
right?
But they'll do. But every other aspiring.
Right.
Rich Paul.
Right. Really who it is.
And then Gerard and I were talking about this too. I mean, the whole thing, the college degree,
right.
The 10 years. And, I just thought about it, that every time black folks get powerful, how do we now change the rules, pass the rules to sort of box them out, like you said? So Rich, they'll grandfather him in. But what do you guys think about that? Do you think this is aimed at Rich Paul? Do you think this is aimed at a league that's almost 80% black players? This is aimed at any, do you think this is aimed at black folks? Let me listen. Why don't we?
I think it's worse than that. I think they're trying to hold on to control. The thing of the writing of the test, that means that we want to control what kind of people these are. But, just thinking about it right now, all this stress about who's contacting these juniors and seniors about being pros, they don't really talk a lot about who contacts the high school juniors and seniors to get them to go to college and all that kind of stuff. That's where they should start, because that's where the real damage comes.
Right.
Actually, when they're in eighth grade.
Seventh
and eighth grade. So let's
make everybody have degrees then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. Okay, include the players.
Right. Let's make sure that they get their degree and make it a qualification.
And this is where it started.
To play basketball.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it started a situation, Darius Bazley. He was top 20 recruit 2018, decided not to go to college, didn't even play, just trained for the NBA draft that 1 year. Got drafted in the first round, and who's his agent? Rich Paul.
Mm.
R.J. Hampton. Now going overseas to New Zealand to play. And he is projected as a top 10 pick, not going to the NCAA. So this is a thing where, and Rich Paul representing Baisley, Baisley beat the system, you know, and that's what this is all about. But also, yeah, they're targeting him. That's what it is. Because, like you said, aspiring Rich Pauls are coming up, that the ones that are savvy, that do their research, you don't need a college degree
to be corrupt either. You don't need a college degree to be corrupt.
Right? Exactly. Right, right.
And it's also like,
exactly.
The way LeBron James did it, they're kind of preventing that, where LeBron James said, I'm not going the traditional route. I got my friend here. I feel like he can represent me. So in the future, that'll be much tougher to do.
That'll be knocked out. But you know what? Whenever it seems like I run into black folks, but it seems like whenever we are in a position where we're not going to exert some power, they say, okay, how do we move the goalpost? So you're right. So presumably you got a lot of Rich Pauls out there who have relationships. And this is not rocket science. Mm-hmm. And I think people are still, I know what you guys think, are pissed off with Anthony Davis. They're pissed off with that whole thing. So, you know, I don't know how you combat that. But I think that if you think this is just something random, you know, that is not aimed at Rich Paul and those who aspire to be like him, I think you're naive.
And they tried to say about Marcus Morris. Supposedly the Clippers gave him a 3-year offer, and Rich Paul had him turn it down because it would be against LeBron and the Clipper-Laker rivalry. But we saw that wasn't true. Marcus Morris decided to turn down that contract, then take the Spurs deal, and then turn that down and take the Knicks deal. And that's when Rich Paul said, I can't mess with you anymore after you're not supplying and guaranteeing your security, I can't mess with you no more. So basically, Rich Paul said that to him, and that's what caused Marcus Morris to fire. But once again, the speculation was that Rich Paul was doing things that were unethical. Morris fired Paul because they had a disagreement, and because Morris just kept changing his mind about the contract. And Marcus Morris admitted to that, actually.
But also, it's like we just said, it's more control. You know, it's just control of the entire situation, regardless of who your agent is. We want, like you said, we want to say in what that is. We want to limit what players can do, even though we continue to limit them. We limit them. We want to be the ones, you know, to decide everything. And it's done under the precipice of we're trying to protect the player, which is a joke. We're trying to protect the player from getting cheated so we can do all the cheating.
Exactly. Our investment.
Off the name of their back. Yeah.
Right.
Don't hear any talk about, you know, what kind of moral obligation they have to the players. What's going to be on this test? You know, talking about character, you know.
And then, I mean, again, once you get into test, I mean, black folks in test, and this is, I'm not painting a broad brush. I mean, you know, we've had some people at this table who've done well on tests, but what do you, tests like what? I mean, you know, like, why? But again, I think that the next move is, what are the Rich Pauls of the world going to do about this? In other words, is there going to be a protest, or how do you now respond to that? Because at the end of the day, you know, and I keep thinking of Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys and NFL, which is the epitome of control, control the product. But the product is young, for the most part, is young people, but young African-American people, if you're talking about the NBA, NFL, big-time college football, big-time college basketball, you got all these black people there, young black folks, and it's almost like, and a core of white people who control it, right? The NCAA, the NFL hierarchy, and it's almost like they're saying, what happens if these people ever really got their shit together? Mm-hmm. What happens if they ever really bound together?
And you look at Major League Baseball, look at where they're going, you know, the Latin American countries where people don't speak English, you know, and things like that, where people are like, they don't have a say, you know, like young African American baseball, young men have a say. They don't want to deal with that. So that's another example.
You bring up a great point even about Major League Baseball, because immigration is such a hot button, almost racist issue in this country. And 32% of the players are in Major League Baseball. But there's no hue and cry except for the manager of the Boston Red Sox, who didn't go to the White House
and he's Puerto Rican, which is part of America.
Yeah. But so what would happen, though? I guess what I'm saying, if I was, you know, I am a journalist, but I mean, let's say if I'm, I would kind of challenge the Latin players.
Right.
I said, man, you guys are like really quiet about this
because
nothing would embarrass the president more, anybody more. I mean, he just happens to be the one in power. Nothing would embarrass anyone in power if these guys, all these who are coming from Venezuela, Mexico, all these, get together and as a group say, listen, you know, we have probably relatives
who
are involved in this kind of stuff. But
it's the same thing with the NFL, how, you know, it wasn't like people were lining up to support Kaepernick. Other black players weren't lining up to support Kaepernick because they were afraid of their own position and the tenuousness of it. So I would assume the same would go for, people from South America and baseball. You know, they're worried about their own positions also, much less being, you know, coming from a completely different culture. Do they know how the political system works?
They know enough about the political system to know what the hell's happening at the borders. I mean, you don't need to have a PhD in international relations.
That's true.
To know.
We had some visitors from Cuba a few weeks ago.
In Germany.
Our political system is obviously a lot different from theirs, but what they can buy, the wares and all that. So people are coming from Venezuela, and you offer them a couple $1 million to play baseball,
right,
and they're going to think 5 or 6 times about going back to Venezuela and, you know, delivering newspapers or staying, you know, that's a pressure.
Right. So nothing changes. I mean, that's what we're talking
about. That's kind of Nabate's point. But, like, that's, you know, that is one theory that's why Major League Baseball has kind of, you know, stepped away from the African American player and been more, you know, willing to go towards Latin players is because of that dynamic where they
fewer headaches.
Yeah, fewer headaches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know,
grateful. They're grateful.
They're cooperative. Yeah.
Right.
And
we have to be. I want to be careful. But, you know, when we say they're more grateful and all that,
right,
you know, if I'm a Hispanic player, I may listen to this.
Their mindset. Major League Baseball's mindset.
I think it's true, though. I mean, when we say – and Gary Sheffield got into trouble about this by saying this a few years ago, about them saying that a lot of the player – for all the reasons we all articulated. They may be here on different kind of visas or work visas. They're making a lot of money that maybe they're sending back home or whatever, and they don't want to – you know, jeopardize stuff. And like you said, Jamal, it wasn't like people were standing in line. Black guys were born here. They weren't standing in line to support Colin Kaepernick. Right. You know, a few did.
Still not.
Right. Only Eric Reed, E. Reed. That's the only guy.
There's a couple of guys. Yeah.
Not even his.
And Kenny Stills.
Kenny Stills.
Stephen
Ross, who, by the way, over the weekend is going to be giving a benefit in the Hamptons for your president. I'm like, what the fuck?
Right.
Exactly. Right.
And again,
Kenny Stills called him out.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Called out Stephen Ross.
Oh, yeah. Watch him be cut, like, in the next week.
But here's the thing. Stephen Ross. And then
blackballed on top of it.
And we have some friends now who are, you know, Ross started that Rise. He's finally Rise. And we all have some friends who are on Rise. You know, and so now if you're on Rise and you're on the board, you know, and this guy's giving his fundraiser for the president at this particular time, do you resign out of principle?
I mean, they knew, you know, the people there had to know who Ross is.
But I mean, it's one thing to know, but another thing, are you coming to my fundraiser?
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, it's lip service. And that's why Kenny Stills came forward, because he, you know, he's like, I don't get this. You know, you're saying all the right things. You want, you know, diversity. You want to improve the lives of all people. But then at the same time, you know, you're fundraising for a guy who is an obvious racist at this point. Everybody knows, you know, it's like, I mean, you can't even, I don't think you can describe him without using the word anymore. Right. You know, so it's like, you know, you can't have it both ways. Or you can.
If you're a billionaire, a multimillionaire, that's what he's saying. You can have it both ways. You can have all ways. All ways it can be bought, we can have.
Yes.
But I'm glad that Kenny Stills spoke up. But it's just, one other thing I want to ask you guys, obviously, you know, you're a musician, Gerard's a musician. We're talking about this Asians thing. You know, I'm sure you have an, you know, let's say in your respective fields, they said, okay, you can only be represented by an agent who's finishing college or, you know, who got a college degree. And you know, that kind of thing. I mean,
well, in Germany, there's I have to tell you about a system for a few years ago when I was singing as a soloist. There are agents there. There's also a way the official arm of the government that's also an agent. And there is kind of a group of them that have a lot of power. They're the ones that are recognized. So the government doesn't have to say, you have to be recognized by one of our agents, but the theaters all know them. Mm-hmm. And it ends up being that way, that you need to have one of these eight agents if you want to continue on. After a certain time, if you're a certain level, you're going to have your private agents, but that's a way of controlling it. What the NCA is doing is a little bit different. They want to control the whole picture. They want to control it. And they want to say, these are the rules. This is the way they want people to think. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit of a different situation. It's more extreme than anything that I would have experienced singing for agents.
And it is more, in the jazz world, it's more subtle. Because, like, jazz festivals, they only deal with booking agents, some of them,
right.
The big jazz festivals. But they're subtle where they say, like, oh, send us your material. You can send it here and we'll get back. They don't even get back, you know. So luckily, I have a couple of people that will speak for me and kind of, like, recommend me and stuff. But I know that. Yeah, I'm eventually going to. I mean, and I'm talking to someone now who's an agent, but more dealing with sports, but can get me in that other realm, like, you know, not just musically, but in the other realm of, like, sports and everything like that, and my talent and being out there. But, you know, that's what I have to do. You know, it seems like you have to have that representative, a legit representative, and it's real subtle in the jazz world, really subtle. You know, so.
But they're interested in treating. I understand the other side of it. They don't just want someone who's playing well, singing well. In my case, they want someone who's responsible, someone who's comfortable to work with, and the agent is supposed to know all that stuff. So when they show up and sing for you, you have somebody who knows maybe the other stuff.
And more of a name. More of a name.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that visibility. Right.
Let me ask you this, both of you guys, something before we get into the nitty-gritty of you know, blood, muscle, sports. What is, Gerard, we talked about, I think, on the last show. How difficult is it? I mean, you know, you're a classically trained musician. Nabata, you went to the Eastman School, right?
Yeah, classically.
Classically trained, too. Is it more difficult to be a black man breaking in the United States in your respective fields, Gerard, classical, you in the music? Or you know, clearly you've been in Germany, Gerard, since like 1989. I mean, you've had a tremendous career. As you look back on the career, each of you look back on your career where you are as an African American man. What, how hard is it, or what's the hardest way to break in, either in the classical in the United States, jazz in the United States, if you're going to go overseas and body? What's
Well, I think
That was a terribly phrased question.
No, I try to
make the best out of it. be a pro.
I'll save you. I'll save you, Billy. It's like Dwight Clark in the end zone, the catch. Yeah. I'll jump up.
incomplete. Oh, great catch.
Thank you, Dwight.
He thought he was throwing that away.
As opposed to the catch against the Ravens in the Super Bowl that didn't happen.
Which one was that? That
they would have won the game for them.
Who was that?
When the San Francisco came back, you know, after the power failure, like 24
that's
points
right,
down.
That's right.
They came back and in one pass just missed like a couple of inches away, and Dwight might have caught that, you know.
And Kaepernick, because he threw it, right?
Yeah.
That would have changed the whole
everything.
Arc of his career.
Yes,
had he won that Super Bowl, he could be
untouchable.
Whatever he wants.
Peeing on the street.
Shoot, during the national anthem. You know?
Right. Colin, why don't you sing the national anthem? And you can kneel while you're singing it.
Wait, didn't my man show his butt to the camera? You know, he didn't get fired for that, did he?
No.
I always like to say this. You know, being black had advantages and disadvantages for me. The advantage was that I was very apparent. You couldn't look over the black tenor singing in an audition. And I think, if I were better at some things, I would have gone further. And I don't want to say that my being black stopped me in some things. I was made to be aware of it in a lot of things. When I did auditions and I had to speak in German much longer than the other colleagues did. And my colleagues, white colleagues, were asked, you know, how do you like being in Germany? Have you been to McDonald's? And they asked me, well, what do you think about, you know, Beethoven and the Industrial Revolution? And and I'd answer them. You know, but a guy said, you have to understand this. You know, because you're black, and the audience is going to look at you five times more to say, well, is he real? Is this the real deal? And when we talk to you beforehand, we just want to make sure that you can deal with that. Mm-hmm. And because I could, it was okay, but it was very aware. And now I work in a theater where we have some colleagues who really do not speak German. And I've said it to my other colleagues, I would have never, ever been hired anywhere mm-hmm. if I spoke at this level. Mm-hmm. And for some of their friends of mine, I've arranged for them to have German coaching. So those are the things that are different, but I'm like, it pushed me to be better. It pushed me to do some things that the colleagues didn't have to do. And I don't think that's always a bad thing. The bad thing about it is a lot of black people, myself included, you push yourself further than you can go sometimes. And you're always asking yourself to do the ridiculous, the things that aren't possible anymore. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate. That's mm-hmm. the unfortunate part of it.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, August 16th, 2019, so I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. If we have any non-white listeners, you have figured it out. You don't have any of those sort of problems. Nobody double, triple, quadruple checks your credentials, certification, competence. You don't have any of that. You don't have to worry about working 2, 3, 4 times as hard, working over and beyond to prove yourself to your colleagues. Nope. You come in at normal time when everybody else does. You leave when it's your time to go. You get all your raises, sparkling performance reviews. You get, if you need a sick day, vacation time, anything else, family emergency, no problem. You have a great office. They never toy with your schedule. You don't have to worry about today, Friday. I went in at 8 a.m. Tomorrow, I'm scheduled to go in at 4 p.m. Sunday, I'm scheduled to go in at midnight. You don't have any of that nonsense with your schedule. Please dial in and let us know, how were you able to accomplish that? Hopefully, we can at least replicate some aspect of the comfort you have secured in your workplace. The number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if you have any difficulties, problems, would like any counter-racist suggestions on what you're dealing with in the workplace, as always, call in. We will hopefully offer a thought or two with some logic that can help to solve problems without creating new problems. That number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. As always, if you're not able to dial in, if it's noisy, you don't have access to be able to call in, you can always email if you're concerned about your voice being recognized, untiljustice@gmail.com. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Feel free to email and I can read your commentary or suggestions on the air. We can keep it anonymous if you have concerns about, you know, keeping your identity under wraps. We can read and share your insight, or if you're having difficulties you would like suggestions on, you can write in. We will share UntilJustice@gmail.com. The audio segment that we began with, Bill Roden. He's black male. He wrote for the New York Times for about 3 decades. He currently writes for The Undefeated. That's his podcast, Brothers on Sports. And he wrote the book $40 Million Slave. I think it just celebrated its, I don't know, 10, 15 year anniversary. It's been out for a while now. Anywho, they were talking mostly about the Rich Paul rule. I think that came down towards the end or middle of last week, the NCAA college athletics. Interestingly, Mark Emmert, who's former president of the University of Washington right here in Seattle, I've seen him many times. He left that job and took the presidency at the NCAA. He's been one of the lead figures in a lot of these cases where they don't want to compensate college athletes. They don't want to cut them a check or anything like that. Now, in this case, I think in that case, Thomaston, New York references it pretty often, them using the 13th Amendment for their justification for not wanting to financially compensate college athletes, a lot of black males in that group. Now, what LeBron James is calling the Rich Paul rule, that if you want to be a sports agent and you want to talk to NCAA athletes or represent them as they're coming out of college, that you have to meet this certain criterion, one of them being that you have a college degree and then you pass their exam, and saying LeBron James identifying, saying, hey, this is for Rich Paul. And I have heard a number of individuals complaining about Rich Paul. They don't like the influence that he and LeBron James had. I guess for people who are not aware, Rich Paul is a black male friend of LeBron James. They met some time ago. LeBron James invested in Mr. Paul to help his business thrive. Now he's a big sports agent. He represents quite a few players in the NBA. But it's very common that you will hear white people complaining or grousing about Rich Paul and the influence that he and LeBron James have in the league, and they don't like it. So this does not surprise me at all. And if anything, important, because even if you're doing well, and by most metrics in a system of racism, white supremacy, although he's still a victim, Rich Paul is doing, you know, so-called well. Don't think that racists can't come along and change the rules completely about what you're doing. I thought that was important from that segment where Bill Roden's brother was also on this segment. His name is Gerard Roden. Didn't even know about his family or know about any siblings that he had. But he was the one musician talking about his experience in Germany. Interestingly, he shared just before they began talking about all of that, Mr. Roden's brother, Gerard, he shared that he is married to a German fella. They've been married, I think, for 3 years. They've been together for 20 years or so. It seemed like this might be someone classified as white because it sounds like his partner is a so-called or a native of Germany. So it might be a white man. That would be a cowbell. But back to the subject at hand, I thought when he was talking at the end about how they would talk to him and test his German, I was especially attentive when he said that being black, it has its advantages and disadvantages. And I wanted to hear what the advantages were. And he said that you get attention. You don't overlook a black fella in the orchestra in Germany. Now, I reckon that would be true in a lot of different scenarios, but at least in my experience, getting that attention is not necessarily a good thing when you're getting attention from racists. And that attention comes in the form of, wait a minute, how did this nigga get here? Do you speak German? Are you sure you speak German? I see your diploma here, nigga, but, you know, you niggas can be kind of slick. Are you qualified to be here? How long have you been here? If that's going to be the nature of the attention, then I thought it was especially interesting because the disadvantage list I knew was going to be substantially longer than whatever the advantage list is, especially in a workplace context. Him explaining how his colleagues, and he did not identify them as white. He didn't even identify them as German, just his colleagues, how their German would not be as good, but they would still be hired. And he said he knew that if his dialect were as poor, as defective as theirs, he would not have been hired. That the system of racism, white supremacy, world nigger law. Absolutely. And I think other folks can attest to seeing that same pattern where whites who are less qualified and or sometimes not qualified at all get jobs, promotions, raises, accolades that a black person on a job who sometimes is overqualified and they can't even get an interview. Widespread system of white supremacy. I also thought it was interesting, even some of the comment, that whole segment, workplace racism, them talking about Mr. Stills with the Miami Dolphins, his criticism of the team owner for holding a fundraiser for Donald Trump. Now, I do on this broadcast regularly talk about not discussing racism in the workplace. Mr. Stills has gone the other direction to talk about it in a very flagrant manner. I guess folks can watch. We have people in the Miami, in the Florida area. I guess you can pay attention and see if that, how that impacts his career, being that flagrant and open about politics. But on this program, I do recommend not discussing politics, not discussing racism. If everybody comes to work, and we've had some people talk this way. I remember back in 2016, we had people who said that they went to work and their company was supporting Donald Trump. They were supporting a specific candidate and were asking people to come in and wear Trump paraphernalia on the job and what have you. So, I mean, this might happen in your workplace even then. I don't have anything to say about racism. Now, whether or not you want to wear the paraphernalia, now that, that's a whole nother scenario. And I think the folks who talked about it said that they did not wear any of the paraphernalia, which will open up questions as well. But not here to have a political debate. That's not what we are paid to do. Not here to talk about racism directly either. We'll talk about justice, but not racism. Let's see. Anything else from that segment? Let me make sure I touch on right now. John Henryism. I said that at the end when he said, being a black person in that environment, that was Mr. Roden's brother, Gerard, where he was saying that working, having to go beyond and work a little harder. And he says sometimes that can be bad because you go too far. To that. John Henryism. John Henryism. That is a worldwide phenomenon as well. We've been talking about that for a decade. The system of white supremacy where we work, because you have to work twice as hard to get half as far, that that ends up having consequences for our health and well-being in this system. I'll stop there, but I did think that was a very interesting exchange. Bill Roden, Brothers on Sports. A few other things I could say about that, but lots to discuss. Moving forward, there was a video. I posted it with the advertisement for this week's Workplace Racism segment. There is a restaurant in North Carolina, A&I Chicken Shack, a black business, unless I've been misinformed. They were targeted. They got a white supremacist document saying that they didn't want niggers in the town. And they had better pack up and leave and that white people didn't want them there and were not going to support the business. They got a lot of attention. Lots of news outlets reported on this over the past week. They showed photographs of the letter. They talked to the black owner who, you know, defiantly said they were not going to leave. Black self-respect that they were going to stay there. Interestingly, they said they got a lot more support after all of the attention about this incident came out, that they've had floods of people supporting their business and wanting to come and eat there and all that. So whoopee, great for that. But again, I do say weekly, just thinking that you are going to be an entrepreneur, that that will solve your problems with workplace racism, that is flawed thinking. It will just adjust the way that you experience racism, white supremacy, which just means that you'll have to have a different type of code. Always, always encourage non-white people who are so-called self-employed. Dial in. Let us know how that experience is evolving with your understanding of counter-racism. I will go first this week on workplace racism. Whew. The yoga instructor. Wow. So for people who know, the details have been posted for the yoga retreat in Florida. They're on the blog. Drop me an email if you have questions, concerns, need any additional information. I did not begin practicing yoga with any thought of being a teacher, any thought of having a so-called career in yoga. I was just practicing for myself for stress relief. And it's taking some time, even at this point, having hosted a yoga retreat and looking to do so again, and been teaching this summer as well. It's still taking some time for me to adjust my thinking to this is not a recreational or leisure activity, that this is actually work. You should be thinking, at least at times, this is work. This is employment. So that's a different way of thinking and approaching this. So this week, there's a black female here in lovely Seattle. I met her right about the time that I started practicing yoga. I've invited her to come practice with me. She's practiced with me several times. And somehow she got excited in the practicing and wanted to study more. She went and took some teacher training classes and is looking to be fully certified as an instructor. Now, I am Gus T. Renegade, and the shirts that I wear every time I go to a public class, I wear my Counter Racist Cows t-shirt. Please treat me like I am a white person. I have shared the Cows podcast with a number of folks, white and non-white, where I've been in a yoga class. The Cows shirt has the Cows logo on it, so I'm not really hiding, you know, Gus T. Renegade. I've talked about white supremacy racism in class with white and non-white people repeatedly, where it's come up either because I was mistreated or just, you know, came up because that is the dominant activity on the planet. So there are white supremacists at the yoga studio, obviously, who know of Gus T. Renegade and, you know, that nigger. Ugh. So I don't exactly feel like I am someone who you could just be like, oh yeah, I know Gus. He's a certified yoga instructor. You know him. You've practiced. Oh, yeah. Come on. I don't exactly feel that would be the case. Even if I wasn't Gus T. Renegade, even if I was just a random victim of white supremacy who did not devote time and energy to discussing this matter publicly and in this manner, I still probably wouldn't exactly feel like, you know, someone classified as white, like, oh yeah, I've practiced here. This is my friend, my homie. She wants to practice or he wants to practice, you know, go in and oh my goodness, you're friends with, oh, okay, come on in. Let's show you. I feel like that it wouldn't be that, you know, even if it's Gus. So I have my black female friend. She wants to do teacher training and she wants to do some of the volunteer programs that you can do where you can practice for free at a studio. If you just volunteer some time doing whatever, helping them out with things. And I know of several studios where they do that, where I've practiced, where I know some of the instructors there and some of the people who actually run that program. So on the one hand, I'm thinking, oh, I should be helpful. And especially because this week when I was with this black female, we were sitting down outside at one of Seattle's many co-op grocery stores. Beautiful. The sun is out, 80 degrees, lovely summer day. We're sitting outside and white female yoga instructor that I've practiced with. She walks by. Now, as I said, I normally, Gus T. Renegade, white people generally do not speak to me. Fine with me. I understand the planet that we're on, so I'm not running out of my way to speak to these folks. We're not homies, friends. We do the class and leave. So, and I've seen this white woman before. I generally do not speak when I see her out in public. In fact, I don't remember a time where I've seen her not at the yoga studio where we spoke, said hi, did a head nod, anything. So she passes, she goes in the store. So I have time to think. I say, okay, I can introduce her and let her know she's a full-time staff member. So, you know, that might be a good, that's what normal people would do, right? Networking. That's what they call just networking. That's the correct thing. Hey, this is my friend. She wants to, you know, be in the program. She wants to do this. She wants to do that. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe she's Gus T. Renegade. Ugh, we don't want you here. We don't want you in the program. So we're talking and my black female pal, she's, yeah, I want to know some other programs, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, she's, you know, white instructor right there. So at about 15, 20 minutes, the white woman comes back out. She's got her kale and organic goodies and all that. And she comes out and I wave and she doesn't really recognize me at first, which I'm processing. I could be totally incorrect. I am processing this because we are in Seattle and I've kind of seen this same phenomenon in many other environments. I think white people, they don't have white friends, so they generally are not accustomed to just speaking to random black people. If they see someone who has a large amount of melanin in their visual field, just keep on rolling. Like, eh, some Negro, whatever. Keep on rolling, not one of my white pals.
So initially, she doesn't respond. I wave. She keeps walking. It takes a second or two to be like, oh, my gosh, Gus, what are you doing? Now, we only practice together, this white woman. We practice together for April. That's it. 30 days. Not every day. Maybe, I'll say 4 times a week. I'll say 6 times a week. Give 2 extra. We'll say 6 times a week. Not every day. 6 might even be high, but we'll just say 6 for argument. Only for April, so I have not seen her in, what is that, 4 months, basically? 3.5 months? I haven't seen her 3.5 months, haven't been to that studio in 3.5 months. The first thing she says is, oh my gosh, we were just talking about you. Now, workplace racism, I think we have said repeatedly. I have said in the past year and 8 months that I've been doing yoga, I have given so many illustrations of white people saying that, oh my gosh, I was watching you, where they knew, you know, specific details about my practice, and to be white people that I don't even know. I've never met, never seen before. To have a white woman that I've not seen in 3.5 months, 4 months, saying we were just talking about you within the last few days. That is the system of white supremacy. And whenever I hear that from a white person, regardless of the context, it always seems odd. That's not even a correct word. It always seems treacherous. like there's some unjust networking going on. I cannot fathom. And from my life and times as a victim of white supremacy, I just cannot think of times where it's been white people were sitting around talking about me where I was not present and something really good happened as a result of their chatter. So anyway, we're just talking about you. I says, oh yes. Anywho, so this is my pal, black female. She's a yogi. She's interested in teacher training. And so the white woman, oh yeah, we have a teacher training program. You should come to the studio, blah, blah, blah. All of which was the whole reason. So she does the introduction, but I'm still, even after that, thinking, I don't know. I don't exactly feel like I am the best ambassador if you need a connection to a white person. I just don't feel like Gus T. Renegade is the best person, even though I am torn because, you know, I am a certified yoga instructor. I have taken a number of classes at a number of different studios over the last year and a half, and I have bumped into quite a few yoga people here in Seattle, so I do know quite a few people, but I am known as Gus T. Renegade to quite a few of those people as well. So I'm trying to figure it out as best I can because I also do know black people, non-white people in general who want to practice yoga, take yoga, teach yoga, that sort of thing. So I'm trying to figure it out as best I can for something that was not supposed to be a part of workplace racism that has slowly entrenched on workplace racism and trying to figure out how to, I don't even know what that is, be a reference or aid other non-white instructors and what have you as they're trying to navigate through all of this. I guess if folks have been in that, it seemed to me at least, it seems like kind of an awkward position. If you have thoughts, feel free to share. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I'll read one email before I get to the callers. Let's see. Kizzy's cousin, email number one, untiljustice@gmail.com if you need the email. Gus, Mr. Fox is always right on time. Kudos, enormous appreciation to Mr. Fox uploading enormous hours of Cows archived content to YouTube. Tons and tons of Cows listeners have been able to access the program or archived content, older programs, because of his just extraordinary efforts. I hope the program continues to be worthy of your time and energy, but gratitude to Mr. Fox. Kizzy's cousin, her email again, it reads, Mr. Fox is always right on time. One of last week's callers mentioned the They Can Ruin Your Life in 10 Minutes broadcast, and Mr. Fox uploaded it to his YouTube channel. I re-listened to the episode, and it reminded me of 3 recent incidents with race soldier females. I think that was from 2012, if I remember. Woof. Number one, I was traveling to work on the train when a suspected racist female came and sat next to me. She kept moving around in the seat, leaning against me and putting her leg up on the armrest. Whoa. That is, I think I might have moved. Next, she started playing music, standing up, dancing, and being generally obnoxious, trying to antagonize me. I ignored her as the train traveled through several stations, hoping she would get off. I was irritated, but Mr. Fuller's voice kept going through my head, so I decided to move to the other side of the carriage. Absolutely, that's what I would have done. Not taking any chances with a white woman, for her to then try and play the victim and say that I looked at her funny or tried to assault her, and she starts weeping. On the train, let me get to a different car as fast as possible. Number two, the second incident happened at work. I went to the cafe to buy some coffee before I gave it up. I was being served and needed to move to the side of the kiosk to get a cup holder. The kiosk is about 2.5 feet wide, so I didn't need to move very far. There was a non-white, non-black male serving me who likes to flirt with females, which is welcomed on my part. The racist female was behind me. Apparently, she was feeling the need to get into a weird competition with me, only I wanted no part of it. As soon as I moved to get the cup holder, she pushed herself forward, expecting to be served ahead of me. My coffee was on the counter, and all I needed to do was pay. I didn't say a word to her. I acted as if I did not see her and made sure my transaction was processed. I then went to get the lift, which is a couple of feet away from the kiosk. It took a little while to arrive, so I was still waiting by the time she had finished being served. When the lift arrived, she attempted to step in before me, literally stepping from behind me to push in front. It seemed she was trying to get her own back. Again, I did not say a word or acknowledge her presence. I got in the lift first. I'm pausing here just because as peculiar as this whole tacky charade may sound, we have heard a number of these, and specifically within the workplace racism context of somehow it becomes a race. Somehow you have entered into a competition with a white stranger that you didn't even know was happening. You didn't even know you signed up. Now we are in a race to get to the door. We're in a race to see who can get to their time card first. It can be the most trivial thing ever. We're in a race to see who can get to the bathroom stall first. Anything. I think Thomas in New York had one. White men, they was going through the doors that, I forgot, they don't have many of them, but the rotating doors he was going through, and the white, I guess with these, you have to push it so it'll go around, and the white man that was walking next to him wanted to be lazy and say, "Ooh, I'll just sneak a ride and make Thomas in New York push, and I can just be on the revolving door as it spins around." And so Thomason, he just goes, "Oh, no, we're not going to do that." He rushes through, and the white man can't just say, "Oh, wait a minute, the Negro changed his pace. I'll slow down. I was going to try and be lazy." He says, "Oh, no." He speeds up and sprints, trying to squeeze into the revolving door, gets stuck, breaks his phone. This becomes a whole fricus, legendary in workplace racism. But this sort of thing happens on a regular basis. Planned ignoring. I don't have anything to say. I wouldn't exert a whole lot of extra energy either. I wouldn't let them cut you off or anything like that. If you're in front, as clearly was the case here, I was in front, handle your business, but I would minimize. It would be nothing to say, nothing to talk about, nothing to negotiate. Like, I observe you're practicing racism, and that would probably be one I would want to get some spacing from that white person. Like, if we're on an elevator scenario, because I think we've had people who've said this, that as well, where somehow the white person is now sprinting, racing to try to beat you getting on the elevator and that sort of thing. Say as little as possible, but do not let them just push you over and totally disregard and abuse you. Number three. The third situation was at the microwave. It was lunchtime and I was queuing to use it. There was a different race soldier female waiting behind me. I realized I left something at the desk I had been allocated, so I ran to get it. I had been chatting to a non-white colleague who I was not queuing but waiting with me. I asked her to put my food in the microwave, finished before I got back. It literally took me less than a minute to run to the desk and back. In that time, the microwave had finished and the race soldier was putting her food in the microwave as I arrived running. She then commented that she didn't realize I would be back, expecting me to let her go ahead of me. I responded, "Okay, well, I'm here now," and put my food in the microwave. Love it. I think the non-white female was too intimidated to put my food in, even though I was ahead in the queue. The sad thing is that I understand the way she was feeling. For a long time, I was so traumatized by the mistreatment I was receiving that I found myself being overly apologetic to racist suspects at work in everyday situations when I had no need to do so. If a racist suspect was waiting to use the sink behind me, I would feel so uncomfortable I would find myself apologizing or offering to let them use the sink ahead of me. I realized I should not be feeling that way, but I felt so abused in the environment. It took me a long time to get over this by making a conscious and deliberate effort to work through these feelings of intimidation. Very important. I think it can be very easy, especially when we're dealing with other victims. And if they are showing that they are victims of white terrorism and might not want to speak up or be too aggressive with a white person, especially in a workplace context, I think it can be very easy for us sometimes. Dirty, come stand here and just let the white folks run all. It can be very easy to take that position as opposed to really just trying to process. Again, this is a victim of terrorism. We've all been abused, and you've got a whole lot of black people who have been fired, abused for being a little slow in moving in a line or not letting a white person go before you in a line or at a traffic stop or anything else. You have generations of that, so it should not be a surprise if you have black people all over the world, non-white people all over the world, who are hesitant to make it seem like they're upsetting white people, they're angering white people, they're not showing deference to white people. Should not be a surprise at all, and something that probably all of us have to work on at some level or another. But just the tackiness of whites in the workplace, I think that can be one means of basic black self-respect. I am not going to the best of my ability, I'm not going to let whites just walk over me if we're in a queue and we're observing a standard protocol. To the best of my ability, I'm not just going to allow them without saying something, doing as best I can from a weak position to say something about this and to try to get this stopped. Excellent job. Lots of these exchanges. That's why I say some of the times, man, with the meals, lunch, snacks, or whatever it is in the workplace, man, if you could eat by yourself or do anything to kind of minimize having to be hanging out with them at the microwave and all that, try as best you can. I've just seen so many incidents in my own work experience and hearing from other people. So much of the tackiness can happen around lunch, food, all of that. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. First few folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have comments to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello, Gus.
Greetings be in Toronto. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, hi. Good evening to you, your listeners and callers. I wanted to give a report as to what's been happening thus far. The first thing that comes most immediately to mind is what happened after the plantation. When I commuted home, because I have to commute a long way. It takes about an hour and 15 to an hour and 30 minutes in length for commute from home to work. So by the time I get home, I'm really tired, and all I want to do is just park the car and go upstairs, do my cardio, get all that frustration out. Lo and behold, some person parked their Jeep in my spot. And so I was waiting and waiting and waiting, and I just got tired of it. Contacted the landlord. The landlord was supposed to give me a number and didn't. So I just contacted the local parking enforcement. And they asked me, well, would you like to get the car towed if needed? And I said, yes. And then lo and behold, it's, you know, two white people coming up and they're taking their time. They see that my car is in front of theirs and they're still just taking their time to come up to that vehicle. So as they finally were about to get into the vehicle, I said, so this is your car? And they said, yes. And I said, so you know that this isn't your parking spot. You know that you're stealing, right? Are you going to be reimbursing me for the time that you spent in this parking spot? Because I certainly didn't give you consent. And they were saying, oh, we're sorry. I said, I don't need your sorries. You've really inconvenienced my time. So by that time, the parking law enforcer was there. And so I told him, I said, well, you know what? You need to speak to these people because I don't know them. And I certainly didn't give them authorization. And he spoke to them and he said, oh, well, you know, you got to move your car, ma'am. I said, yes, I'm moving my car, but you need to let them know that they're not supposed to be in that spot because they're not paying for it and it's theft. I certainly didn't let up on it. And that's what I'm realizing more and more in terms of just getting my dignity back. And it's, I slightly digress, but I find myself, standing up more and more, meaning that, and it's with the little things, like for instance, if I go to the laundry and there's two dryers, there's four big dryers and they're stacked one on top of the other, as if in a square shape. And what I would do is I would take a top dryer and a bottom dryer. And I mean, some people might think, oh, you know, this is, you know, where is she going with this? But, what I do is, hello?
Yes, ma'am. What I do is.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yes. What I do now is I put the clothes into the top dryers. If they're available, I put them both into the top dryers because that's what's easiest for me. And you'll have other patrons, white patrons come in, sometimes non-white come in, and they will be doing their little snickering and, you know, because they have to use the bottom drawer dryers. But it's like, you know what, that's what I'm doing now. I'm doing more of what's best for me. Some people think it's selfish, and I think it's about time that we do get a little selfish because our community has been quite selfless and forgiving and over forgiving. And it's like, no, it's time to, in order to recognize that you deserve more, you need to start with the little stuff. So even if it's, standing up for your parking spot, then stand up for your parking spot. If it means taking the top dryers because they're more convenient for you, do that. If it means, you know, getting the better sheets and not feeling that you have to share it, do that. If you've earned the prize, you fully own it. You don't feel like you need to have to share it, you know, things of that nature. So what I would urge callers, listeners, yourself, and I will continue to do with for myself, is to take the best of what life has to offer as much as you can because you deserve it. So that was the first part. The second part was the plantation. So for the plantation, still have the white women getting away with what they're getting away with. They are being watched, and I do hear on the sidelines, you know, about how they're not doing their work and everything. So I just continue plugging away at what I'm doing. And it helped me to realize that, and it might seem cliche, but it actually drives the point home that you are your own brand. And you do what you can to strengthen your position, just as white supremacists are doing whatever they need to do to strengthen their white supremacist position. You need to do what you need to do to strengthen your own position. So if it means that you, I don't necessarily mean, you know, do John Henryism, just, you know, work according to your own integrity, and recognize what you need to do in order to become not expendable, and that, you know, if they're to lose you, that they would lose a valuable part of the team as much as possible. Sometimes we don't have control over that, but we do the best we can to at least hone in the skills and learn as many skills as we can while we're on the job. So whatever training opportunities that are available, be the first one to volunteer for it. If you notice that, you know, there's some people that don't want to, say, participate in certain functions, if you can, be the first one to say, okay, I'll do it for you, you know, so you can get yourself in there and branch out that way. So my main goal is, a message that I want to send is just do the best for you that you can and expect the best for you as much as possible. And thank you. I leave my line.
Much obliged. Be in Toronto, global system of racism, white supremacy. Those commutes, man, we've had people writing in about being harassed on their transit trying to get home, or their parking place not being available when they get home. The commute, we do talk about that pretty regularly as being one aspect of white supremacy, racism. Black self-respect. Guess that's our, that would, I guess, be our early theme for this week, maybe. Black self-respect, given Kizzy's cousin, and then be in Toronto, them sharing being bullied in different environments, or having whites, really anybody who is mistreating you, whether it's taking your parking spot, trying to cut in front of you in a workplace situation. Black self-respect, as much as we can, you know, speaking up, saying something, calling out incorrect behavior when people are mistreating you. That is extremely helpful in taking us the direction we need to go, solving this problem. Use your voice, speak up. That is why we do all the cardio and working out and trying to, you know, be our best, be at our best physically, mentally, all aspects, so that we can speak up and be about the business of counter racism. And I think that's correct as well, to get the enforcement official to address that. And I'm here in Seattle. That is no laughing matter. I mean, they are draconian about parking. They hand out $200 tickets left and right. That is in for, because I mean, that is time and energy. Exactly as you said, I've been at work all day. I'm tired. I don't have any energy. I want to come home, rest, recuperate, so I can go back and go through all this trauma again, not to have to sit outside and wait for you to get out of my parking space that I have not given you consent to use. You're not even supposed to be here. You know you're not supposed to be there. They probably have signs posted and everything. That is big business here, and respecting people's time and energy. I talk about that all the time as well. That's what Mr. Fuller defines as economics. Whites find lots of ways of stealing our time and energy. Be very protective of your time and energy. Other folks who dialed in, if you have suggestions on what's been shared thus far, and or if you have your own situation, if you have a hand up, we have resume suggestions. If folks have tips that they would give out, you're putting a resume together. Anything, any offering suggestions, that would be appreciated. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Draptomania.
Oh, hi. Greetings, guests, callers, and listeners. Thanks, Dee, for sharing. That was a very encouraging message that you gave. I was like to share. I was going to see if you have some constructive words, you know, that I'd like to hear. And I can definitely identify with a lot that you talk about. I have some workplace racism that I wanted to speak about. Although I don't work with white folks, I work with all non-white black people. Had an incident this week We, at my job, we use this thing, this method where we text. We have this thing called, it's a group text. And as you're doing the different tasks, you're letting each, member know, what you're doing. And so, therefore, you just go in and you'll, text what you did after you got finished doing whatever task that you did. You're going to go in and you text that you did that task or what have you. But what has happened and what has been happening is that it has been abused by certain employees that I would assume, I'm going to say that basically just want to, as a form of like causing drama and chaos, they're using it to cause like a lot of, chaos and things like that. Like, I didn't do something. I did something on a job, and I guess the way that I had did it, this individual sent me in very petty, and they had some complaints about it, about me, the way I had done it. And instead of, which would be the proper, in my view, I think the proper way to go about it would be, like, if you have, a problem or if you think that something is not being done correctly, although you're not the supervisor, you should basically go through issues like, a protocol, or maybe you should go through the supervisor, maybe say something to the supervisor, and, then the supervisor could basically just, address the issue or, come to you or what have you. So, on most jobs, there's a protocol, policy, like a chain of command and how you should handle situations. So, but these individuals have them go in and they rant and they complain and, cause a bunch of drama and what you didn't do. Oh, this person didn't do this, this is messed up, and that, and that, and it causes a whole lot of chaos, which is totally unnecessary. I try not to do that. When I do something, I put down what I do. So even though, I complain about it to myself, yes, I do, and I communicated that this with the supervisor, but my code is not to use that form of communication to rant and go on a rant and try to, bring that type of attention to other coworkers, because it's just causing confusion. And so this individual, basically, he went in and he did, he went in and he was like, say, well, this and that, could you please, tell this person to whoever's doing this and that, could they please stop doing it? And, so then I made a response because I knew it was being directed to me. And, it's like if it was like somewhat like a covert kind of matter, like a passive aggressive move on his part, because he knows that I'm the one that does a certain task. So I made a response to it. I responded. I said, well, if you see this and that like this, it's because I gave the reason why. When I went to work, my supervisor, the same supervisor that I told you that, he was also using the form of communication in an improper way. When I had called you guys before and I was discussing how when I had a problem with one of my coworkers, how he was going to go in and just generally put in the group me that this, if you, whatever the situation that me and him had discussed on a personal level. So it's not just this coworker that's doing it. It's from the supervisory level, and it's trickling down that they're doing it. So he came to me and he said, well, you didn't have to respond to him, because, if he sees this and that done wrong, and he could have instead of being so petty, he could have just, took it down or whatever. And I was like, yeah, that's the whole problem. Like, it's just a lot of pettiness. Like, if you see something, it's like you're trying to, somewhat like dry snitch or kind of cause like do poodles of brownie points from the supervisors by trying to pull somebody else down or causing some type of making it seem like you're not doing your job when, you know, I let my work speak for itself. Like, that's what I've, that's another one of my brands. It's like, I'm just going to do my job to the best of my ability, and I'm going to let my work speak for itself. In spite of all of the other shenanigans that may go on, I'm just going to do the best that I can. And if I don't do something correctly, I will, you know, admit, because I know I'm not perfect and I know I have room for growth. I know that I can always learn because I do make mistakes and there's some things that I do overlook. So I acknowledge that. But it's just the way that people's motive, when they do certain things, you know, you just know that they're doing this. It's like abuse. You're using this format to cause problems. Like you're trying to bring like some type of negative attention on, you know, on your coworker. So when my supervisor was saying, well, you know, this guy didn't have to do that, and you know, you don't next time just leave the things like that. And I was like, no, I'm not going to go about it in that manner. What I'm going to do, I'm going to do it the proper way. I'm just not going to, you know, do it in the manner that I was doing it before. Even though what I was doing, I don't really feel like there was anything wrong, because if you're supposed to be a team, you know, I said, you know, what happens with the teamwork, this dream work, everybody runs around and says that you're a team. But then when something is not, the any time you have an opportunity to call out something that somebody else is not doing, to basically make them look bad, to get, I guess, on brownie points with the management or supervisor, they have no issue with pointing that out. But then in the next breath, they'll sit back and say that we're a team. So it's like hypocrisy, you know, that goes on. So, you know, I just wanted to, talk about that, like how, you know, it was just basically, when what I did, I didn't address this person at all. I did planned ignoring, because I feel like, you know, and I've discussed this on the show before, that a lot of things, catches are pulled with the intention on having you react. But, you know, although, like you even say, just, although I might not react to a situation, it does not mean it doesn't take a toll on you, in a mental, you know, on your mental state, even on your physical state. It can take a toll on you because you're, I think it's like somewhat like you're suppressing it at that time, because you can't really react. You have to respond to a situation, but you still need a way to be able to get that out of your system. You know what I mean? So this workplace racism is a way of me purging. I guess this is a format where we can, you know, call in and just be able to, like, kind of release some of the tension of situations that's gone on throughout the week, because, you know, some of us don't have that outlet to really, like, you know, discuss these matters with other people. And, you know, sometimes when you're, you know, with Dee, you know, she was saying that something about her, when she reported that situation of those women on the job that were harassing her, and they said that they're being watched. I would just say, and I think I heard her say, to just don't put too much into that, like they're really going to do anything about that, because a lot of times they'll say that they're watching somebody, or they're, you know, that they know about a situation, but that doesn't mean that they're going to do anything about it. It just means that they know about the situation, and they're just they're basically aiding and abetting in that type of behavior going on. So I wouldn't put too much into, like, expecting them to do anything about those women on that job, because I'm quite sure before she came on that job, they had to have known how these women were. So I just wouldn't put too much into that. And that's the same premise I have with these people on this job, is that they know how these individuals are. So I just, you know, I'm just trying to go about things in a proper manner and do things to the best of my ability and try not to allow the stress because it does, like I said, it, you know, it will take a toll on you. Eventually, even though I can sit here and say, well, like, you know, this is not bothering me, this is not stressing me out. But then, you know, later on throughout the week, I'll find myself, you know, feeling a little down or a little depressed. And, you know, it you know, it does get me, you know, after all. So thanks for allowing me to share. Thanks for allowing me to, you know, speak about my situation. And thanks for listening.
Much obliged, Draftomania. Have to remember your work environment. You have a lot of non-white people, victims, in your work environment. Make sure I don't get confused. Those text messages, I'm not sure exactly what the original purpose of the text was supposed to be, but I can't say that I'm stunned to hear that it has devolved to, you know, griping, grousing about other employees and what they did or didn't do or that sort of thing. That, as you were sharing, I remembered the grandsister, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. And she said sometimes if in an environment, especially if you're in an environment with a lot of other non-white people, sometimes the counter-racist thing that you can do is, I don't participate in that. Now, I don't know if this is a forum where you have some anonymity when you do these texts. If they come up and they like, they can identify, if everybody can identify and see that, oh, that's from Ted and that's from, you know, Rhonda or whatever.
Yeah, they can.
Oh, okay.
They can. There's no privacy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that's how they're supposed to be able to tell you're doing your task. So, you know, or if you're not doing a task. Yeah. So yeah, it has your name saying that this is from who. So, you know, I mean, there's been employees that literally had rights and they just went on rant. You know what I mean? About, it's just horrible. But I digress. I apologize for interrupting.
Not surprised about the ranting at all. It seems like that is pretty common in a lot of workplaces, at least workplaces that I have been. Now, they didn't all have a text system either or any sort of messaging or whatever. But that grousing, whether it's just getting together and we're going to talk bad about accounting today, we'll all meet around the water cooler and grouse about how they all, you know, are worthless. They should fire them all. And then tomorrow we'll come and we'll talk about human. I mean, that is rampant in workplaces, white and or non-white, both doesn't matter. I would, in an environment with a lot of non-white people, victims, Dr. Welsing, I'm not going to participate. And they'll see my name pops up. For the text, anytime they see Draftomania, workplace related. I'm not on here grousing about, you know, Bill came in 5 minutes late today and messed up the whole station and threw off our product. None of that. There has to be a proper protocol. If there are serious problems, then there has to be a supervisor that you can go and report if, you know, unsafe things are happening or if work is not getting done, if there are serious problems. It would have to be something other than these, you know, why text messages to talk about who's not doing what. So, yeah, I would just not participate so that, you know, I am not a part of the fray. This is not how I handle business here. And, you know, I probably wouldn't have anything to say about it. Someone brought it up, you know, to ask me how come, you know, I don't see any texts or anything like that. I just would not participate. And that would be my form of black self-respect. I always think it's important when we start to recognize when the toxicity or abuse of a work environment, when it is bothering us at some level, I always think that that is important. That is a time for more self-care. If that means picking out, getting more rest, if that means people that do not cause you additional stress, if you are fortunate enough to have non-white people that are close to you, who generally are pleasant to be around. You can talk about constructive things, whether it's related to racism or not. You can talk about constructive things and actually enjoy your time. You'll feel a little bit better. As they say, your spirits have been lifted when you've been able to spend a little time with this person. great. Maybe you can spend some extra time with them. Pick out some foods that you really like. Try to do things that are going to be constructive. It's summertime, so if we can get outside, that's always, you know, recommended. If you notice that you're feeling down a little bit, but I always think that, you know, recognizing that, because when we don't, it can get worse. And that either being really, really sad, really, really angry, combination of the two, that it can intensify and things can end up being in a much it can be a much more challenging position, as opposed to catching that early, even taking some time off if that's possible, to do self-care that is so, so important. Workplaces under this system are designed to corrupt the mental, physical health of Black, non-white people. Did want to make sure I reiterated as well. Even I would say this, even for someone like Draftomania, if you know you're in a really toxic work environment, I would still be looking for training opportunities. Be in Toronto. It just said that I would put that in with Black self-respect. Still, if I'm going to be here, I'm going to maximize. And that would be the case if I'm leaving. Let's say if I already know in my mind, I'm going to be leaving this job October 1. Even if that's the case, it's August 16 right now. Even if that's the case and I see they got a 3-week training program, let's see if I can finish it before October 1. Oh, yeah. Let's get that done. Put that on my resume. You're always looking to get better. Might pick up some skills that you can use on the next job that you can use to replace white supremacy with justice. White people generally are not going out willy-nilly, giving out constructive skills to other Black people to enhance you, to improve, refine your understanding and information. So if those opportunities present themselves, take advantage. In fact, I would be proactive asking about training opportunities. How can I get better? How can I improve? That should be something that's just in our regular code. That's one thing they will not be able to say when it comes performance review time. Wow, Draftomania, that'd be always asking about training opportunities. My goodness, we have to hide training documents. Like, soon as the training opens up, they're the first one in to sign up and get on the list. I don't know what's going on here. Well-trained Negro right here. Context of what was that? Did I miss?
No, I was going to say, like, when you were saying about the text messages, that's, like I said, that's my goal. I make sure I do not participate in that toxicity. I don't use it for the purpose that it's supposed to be used for. I'm not going to use that texting for you know, to try to you know, badger other or complain. Use that to abuse it. It's just not, I don't think it's professional, and I just don't think that that's the purpose of it. It shouldn't be, even though the supervisor, the manager does it, she does it, you know, but the other people are not supervisors, they're just workers. So, you know, like I said, I think a lot of that is just, you're just trying to get, you know, you're doing this just to try to get some type of, accolades from the boss. You want to look good for your boss, so you know. So they figure, like, if she does it, the climate of the supervisor, it just trickles down. So whatever they do, it tends to trickle down to the rest of the company. So that's how they act, because that's, you know, what the management does. And that's just my experience. I've seen that on other jobs that I've had. You'll see that whoever is at the top of the command, and that they are very, you know, toxic, ranty, and just unprofessional. You know, I've had some that curse the employees out, and the rest of it, and then the rest of the whole company is just toxic all throughout. So, you know, they'll have that whole, I can't think of the word right now, but it's just the whole, the climate of the whole company. So that's all I wanted to add.
Much obliged, Draftomania. Context of white supremacy. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I would continue doing exactly what you're doing in terms of I don't participate. use it for what it's supposed to be used for. Leadership has a big impact in a work environment when management, leadership, when they are not behaving in a just manner, that absolutely trickles down. Everybody else gets to see that. That kind of can set a disastrous tone for the workplace, unfortunately. I have seen that frequently as well also. I guess if the leadership is participating, it might be more challenging, but I would say just kind of in general for that type of thing, if you see like a text service or some sort of communication service where it was supposed to be one thing. This is what this is supposed to be used for, communicating, sharing information about this one thing. And now it has kind of devolved into something else. And we're catching up on Game of Thrones or whatever else, badgering other, you know, employees. You don't have to snitch on anybody per se, but you can say, it's my understanding, unless I've been misinformed, that this platform was intended for, you know, whatever it is, XYZ. Is it possible that we can streamline? Because it just seems like, you know, it's a lot of reading and things that don't really have to do with XYZ. That way, we're not really snitching. It's just maybe people don't really, you know, because I had to double check. I wasn't really sure what it's supposed to be used for myself. This is what this is supposed to be for. Is it possible we can get back to that original mission so that people are not, you know, using this platform for things beyond the original intent? That's still in the question lane. And that's one. Sometimes I have seen where that can work, kind of a refocusing back to where something has kind of gotten way far away from what the original intent was. But, you know, if the management is all into this too, well, then that might not work. Other folks who dialed in, if you have suggestions, comments on what has been shared thus far, resume tips included, feel free. If you have your own situation, you can share that as well. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings, everyone. I had the intention of responding to your pre-program displays on sports, athletics. I would say to a level that it has its place, but it's, of course, it's not going to solve the global system of racism, white supremacy, but as an ingredient in the process of solving the problem, is something that athletics is something that people do to basically have a fit lifestyle. I think that in terms of workplaces' concern with athletics and or sports, the remedies for it would be with youth when they're very young. For instance, most of us non-white people who are racially classified as black only understand sports from the standpoint of being the entertainer, the person who throws the football or shoots the basketball or you know, that sort of thing, as opposed to the many employments that exist in and around that subject that in a lot of cases provides more of a salary than the people who actually are out there entertaining people, that sort of thing. It needs to be seriously looked at, and those interests can be made interesting to young people when they, I mean, elementary school, as far as that concerns. As I think I've mentioned before on this program, I can care less if what is called and understood as professional sports. If it didn't exist, it wouldn't bother me at all. That's not why I coach football or have involved myself in athletics. I use it as a vehicle to be able to share and sometimes say things to young people that I think are constructive, especially things that have something to do with eliminating the system of racism, white supremacy, and replace it with a system of justice. It brings me and also younger people to that environment, through that environment. So unfortunately, it's very little conversation on that particular perspective of athletics from that standpoint. Of course, in this world, it's going to take finances. You have a lot of individuals who have developed an income that can invest monies and their time and energy, which probably be more of a venture as opposed to just money. And also, I think I would like to give kudos to LeBron James, because I think this recent talk with the agents and the rules that the races rules that have been implanted by the NCAA and the NFL and NBA, all of them in cahoots. It's probably because of what he has done it personally with his experiences. And he certainly would be an example, I would say, of what I have been. I don't know how good I've done a good job of explaining it, but he is an example of what I'm talking about as far as bringing along people that he knows and their worthiness or their qualifications are not based on some white perspective. It's based on the relationship that he has with that person or that group of people, which really counts. And those are just some of my thoughts. Hopefully I made some sense on the subject. And I'll listen, and if I hear something that maybe I can comment on or based on some experiences that I had when I worked professionally that I can contribute, I will on the program today. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Absolutely, in terms of, I think, LeBron James, Rich Paul. And we hear this so frequently in the workplace context specifically, where you have a black person who does well, does really well in their chosen field. They've been talking about black astronaut Ed Dwight, my memory is correct, been talking about him, all that he had to fight through in the space program. He thought, hey, if I just go there, show him I'm great, I know mathematics, I'll be fine. Bill Roden's brother, Mr. Gerard, he was talking, said, hey, I know German, I'm a musician, I'm qualified, I'll be able to go here and do great. They'll see that I'm great, and that'll be that. And that is not the case at all. LeBron James can go out, be spectacular, do all of these great things, open a school, for God's sake. This is not someone who's out smoking crack, and you got, you know, TMZ showing him out with prostitutes and everything after every other game. He opened a school, for goodness sake. Mm-hmm. And it's a, we don't want you going out and being like that, Negro, out here acting like you're going to hire other black friends and have them come in here and do a job that we want almost, it seems, exclusively for white people to go out. And if they really cared the hypocrisy of it all, if this was really, hey, you know what? We are concerned. These black athletes that come here, because this is an NCAA rule, we're really concerned about them. You know, we've sat back and watched this for decades. These young athletes, they come here, they go, their big dreams are going off to the NBA and getting paid. And they sign those big lucrative multi-million dollar contracts and they don't know what they're getting into. And these agents just bilk them. They just take all their money and then they end up poor and penniless. Now, that is true. They would have been right on the money. That is fact. They got documentaries where they've been talking about this for decades, which is the whole point. If you were really, really concerned, you sat back and watched this. All these black athletes with so much talent, they end up out of the league, broke and penniless. Why didn't you make this rule 2019? I mean, this is not a new thing, right? You being concerned, if you're really concerned about these athletes, why not make it way, 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 way back then? I thought that was a great point Bill Roden made. Are you telling me that just because you get a college degree and pass a test, that means, oh, yeah, this fella here is definitely not corrupt and is not going to be taking advantage of these young athletes and taking all their money because he's got a four-year degree and he got an A on our exam? Is that what you're saying? Come on. Tell me something other than we are not interested in having any more Negroes slip into our system and we're going to try and make it as difficult as possible. That means four-year degree. We might change it and say you have to have a PhD to be an agent. Whatever we, you know, want it to be, because we make the rules. We'll make it what we want it to be and see if you get another LeBron James that way. See if you get another Rich Paul that way. I think Jay-Z is another one who went in to be an agent. I think he might be, because I don't know if Mr. Carter has a four-year degree or not, but that might be another one. We're not interested in seeing any more Jay-Z's do this either.
Right.
Could be an error.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, the resources that can be accumulated is endless. I mean, lawyers. I mean, you're talking about producing lawyers who would be authorities on the legal aspect of entertainment. Entertainment alone, not just sports, but because that's all sports ultimately is entertainment. And you know, from a legal standpoint, in other words, a quote unquote participant would say, "Well, this is my attorney." Or this, or a group of them would say, "This is our attorney," and it's a black male or a black female, you know, that sort of thing. That this person, and then out of that also the production of where young people become interested in things other than, I mean, because there's a medical aspect of athletics. Come on, you know, surgeons would come out of that. You know, it'll end up be a situation where someone that comes through such a program can come up with an answer to the AIDS virus. You know, something like that. You know, but white people, that's just an attempt to quote unquote stay ahead of counter racism. That's basically what that is. White people have always been proactive. Because as Dr. Wilson says, they you know, they're concerned about any type of counter-racist activity. They have to stay ahead in that light. But at the same time, I think collectively we need to become more and more wise and more and more aggressive than just being interested in being the participants, the warriors, so to speak, the people who are the entertainers, and be much more than that when it comes down to it. Yep.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. I guess the last thing I'll say on that one before I get to some of the other folks who dialed in, if you can think about that, like any context where you've been on a job, qualified, working the job for some period of time, and then white people have the ability to just come in and say, you know what? You might have been doing this job for the last 3 years, 4 years, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, however long you've been doing. You might have been doing this job for that long. Today, we just decided that you are no longer qualified to do this job. Sorry. That is the system of white supremacy racism. Where yesterday, yes, you were qualified. Yes, and sir. Today, we just signed a piece of paper that says you are not qualified. And, well, you know. that is that, because you don't have an army to do anything about it. So
because I said so.
There you go. There you go. We just made the rule up at lunchtime, and sorry, looks like you'll have to go back to school or find a new job or, you know, whatever. You'll just have to make do. We got new rules, and we're doing it in your best interest. Context of white supremacy. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Resume tips. Folks have any thoughts, suggestion, resume tips. That is always appreciated. I guess I should try to nab other emails as we move through. Other folks who wrote in. Black female caller, victim of racism. She writes,
I recently came back from medical leave, and this white female coworker who is obsessed with me could not wait to throw her work on my desk. I find her to not only be racist, but just plain evil. I asked my other white coworkers if she ever asked anyone else to help her or threw her work on their desk. They said no. They are aware she only comes to me. What makes her not only racist but a terrible person is that she knows she could just ask me for help, as I work in a racist organization, so I really can't say no, but she doesn't ask me for help. Instead, she goes to my white female manager, who is married to a black man, male, cowbell, to get her to come over to me and bicker at me to do this white lady's work. It's completely unnecessary. Then the same white female manager, after I have assisted this lady, will call me over and bicker at me for not being a team player because this white lady didn't see me doing the work. This white lady comes late every day, and her work is not hard to do. It can be completed in less than an hour. So I get in trouble because this white lady did not see me, but it's obvious the work is completed. So I go over to her, and this white lady was ready because before I said anything, she downplayed what took place and acted as if she was a victim. Heard that one many times. She claimed my white manager was just trying to help us. She does this often, and she is the mastermind behind the terrorism, then wants to play victim even before being confronted. This white lady has the lowest title in the department, but is able to get the manager to follow her orders, which I realized all white people are powerful regardless. Gonna read the last portion of that sentence again. Very important. I do not disaggregate whites, meaning I don't try to go through and say, well, you know, I think this is a private, you know, in the system of white supremacy. And I think this over here is a general in the system of white supremacy, meaning that this is a white person who is very, very weak. And this is a white person who is very, very powerful because they work as a collective. The weak racist and the powerful racist both see me as a nigger. So they will work together to niggerize me. That last portion of the sentence again read, I realized all white people are powerful regardless. I also realized how important it is to ask questions. Oh, some moron says that a lot. I know a lot of people who say that. The team that is below my team is all black women. This actually is the lowest department in the office. That is not a coincidence by accident. That did not happen by accident. That is not a coincidence. That is how whites chose to arrange the department. It has always been all black, female, until they can't find anyone due to the high turnover rate, which they then start hiring whites to work there temporarily, as they immediately get promoted once they find another black female to work there. I feel like I heard this before, where they had, I think even in the courthouse in Florida, if I'm, you know, my memory is bad, where they had an all black department and a white woman was there. She was lazy, didn't do any work.
then they got her out immediately. She got a promotion off to the white people where she tried to do the same thing to be lazy, but didn't work when she was no longer with the Negros. But that seems common. Anyway, I asked my white female coworker, who is slightly above me, if they will make any hiring changes, and she told me they have the team right how they like it. Highlight that boldface print? Absolutely. I didn't ask any more questions because her response confirmed my suspicions. I have witnessed multiple black females quit and multiple white people get promoted. I am not going to go into detail, but when I asked my black coworker, who has been here for over 10 years, if they ever promote black people, she did not have an answer, but she did make many excuses as to why white people were getting promoted, such as them being good workers, them being here for a long time, etc. I asked her how white people who were here 3 months get promoted over black females who were here for 4 years. She said the black females did not want to take the job, which I found not to be true. I just want to pause here. I spoke before. We had Kizzy's cousin. She wrote in about a victim in the workplace. And again, I think it can be, workplace or no, I think it can be very easy to be frustrated with other victims of white supremacy and how we respond to white terrorism. This is very common, making excuses for why white people practice racism. Well, they didn't promote them because they didn't want the job, or the white people have been here longer, or they have worked harder. Or the black people, or I mean, anything that is not stunning. And that's something where it can be frustrating. Absolutely. But that is one where, at least in my view, I think black self-respect, counter racism logic says, I'm not going to be upset at this person. They are a victim and they're probably fearful. Having been here this long, I'm just fearful and trying to hold on to my, you know, little bit of what job they allow me to have as well. Continuing, last, the longer my white male coworker feels comfortable, the more he mistreats black clients. He was promoted to my department unjustly, but when he realized the whole department supported him, he has just been nonstop mistreating black clients. I wonder if this is the fellow who she had written before. She said he was like taking home clients' information and doing some sort of like amateur private eye work to like see if these clients, if the black clients specifically, if they were submitting fraudulent claims or if they were, I mean, somehow trying to deceive the whites into getting a check of some sort. I wonder if this is the same person who has found so much comfort in the department and seemingly endorses his rogue activity against black clients. I don't know if it's the same person or not. Asking questions and realizing that really anywhere in the system of racism, white supremacy, if that individual is classified as white, you're dealing with someone who is powerful and dangerous, regardless of their title, age, position, bank account or no, criminal record or no. If they are classified as white, could be a problem. Context of white supremacy, number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Other folks dialed in, if you have suggestions, comments, questions, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, codified software developer.
Hello, Gus. How are you this evening?
Right poorly. How are you?
I'm right poorly as well, sir. Good evening to all the listeners and callers on the line. I just wanted to call in and give sort of an update on the situation at my plantation. I think when I last left off, I was talking about how they were trying to push me to take some sort of lead position or take more responsibilities. So I resisted, and that was going very well. And I took a leave of absence in May. I used the FMLA, which we all can use, and stress is covered under FMLA, so you can take up to 12 weeks if you need to. So I took 4 weeks, and when I came back, I was made the lead of a team while I was out, made the technical lead of a team with no pay increase, no promotion, no nothing. So, of course, I was angry. I was upset. And I was talking to an older Black person who's in the same field as I am. And he said, you know, this, of course, is what you should expect. And I said, yeah, I know. And he said, well, just use it. Just do it and put it on your resume. And I said, that's actually a pretty good idea, right? I'm getting the experience to use it and go somewhere else where they will pay me, hopefully. I've also been doing little things to make my job easier, such as instituting a sort of office hours policy where you can only speak to me about the issues that you have during a set time during the day, and otherwise I'm to be left alone so I can do my job. That has not gone over very well with the white people at the job, but I've been standing my ground, and they have accepted it thus far. That was really all I had to say right now. I will mute my line, and thanks for allowing me to share.
Love it. That is Black self-respect, just setting boundaries, whether it's setting boundaries about touching, any sort of touching, setting boundaries about your name and making sure that they, you know, call us by our correct title and what have you. When I'm going to be called, boundaries, because I'm of the opinion, we've had whites who've testified to the same thing. All of those infractions where they are doing things that are incorrect, that generally you would just not, that would be considered a violation of workplace protocol. Every time, cut it off at the knees. That's what Walter Beach said. Cut it off at the knees. The great, been on the program a couple times. The very first time, like, you know what? These are the work hours. This is when I would like all communications to take place. Much obliged. Unless, you know, that's part of my contract and, you know, I'm going to be compensated for that. The being out on FMLA leave and you come back and you have been made the lead of a project without additional compensation, that almost sounds like grounds for another 12 weeks of FMLA leave and stress. I do think the suggestion about updating, I'd said that before, resume suggestions, I said that about adding that to the resume, put it on there. I always think any opportunities, even this type of situation, which is, in my view, tacky at best, where I did not ask for this and am not being given any additional compensation, I at least am going to tweak my resume to reflect that I did have additional responsibilities. And all of us should be doing that if we're on jobs, because that's so common with Black people. When we get all these extra duties, we probably have a position that is two or three pay grades above where we're working. But that's not reflected in our actual job description and pay. At minimum, adjust the resume to reflect all that, you know, you do. Really sparkle there. The FMLA, I'm glad that that got mentioned. Self-care is super important. She did say stress was covered there. Was the paperwork process difficult for you to be able to get your time for the FMLA?
No, not at all. And I actually, I know a Black therapist who was more than willing to sign the paperwork, write it up, give me the exact diagnosis that I needed to make it go smoothly, and it was approved within 2 days. Mm.
Wow. Well, I would only encourage other folks, 2 days. Hey, if you are really feeling stressed, overwhelmed with things that are happening in your work environment, we talked about that before, and I think there are other CALS listeners who also have used FMLA, found it to be helpful in their workplace situation. Read your policy and procedure. Check the paperwork. I think they even have resources online that can help with that, unless I've been mistaken. So check it out. Use it. Black self-care is extraordinarily important. All of this is designed to have us stressed and, you know, in fits. And, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
And I just want to say, I'm sorry, Gus. I'm sorry for interrupting you. But I just want to say, I mean, it's incredibly important, like you're saying, to read your policies and procedures and understand that you actually do have a right to FMLA. You know what I'm saying? And use that appropriately. I've talked to so many Black people in the past few months who aren't even aware of that, who are probably eligible for FMLA due to any sort of medical reason, and just aren't taking advantage of something that is there. And I mean, they under FMLA, they can't fire you. Like, they can't fire you, right? That's considered, I mean, your job is protected for that time. Now, if you come back and they fire you, I mean, white supremacy. But they can't fire you during that time. So I just wanted to say that. And also just having a Black professional who understood the language and the nomenclature of everything and knew exactly what to say was also very beneficial. That's all I have. Sorry.
No apologies. That is, you know, super important. I remember Dr. Kanban even suggested that if you're being stressed with things that are happening in the workplace, find a therapist, report, get them to write up their medical opinion about the trauma you're experiencing and how it's adversely impacting your health and well-being. And if you can find a Black therapist, bravo. Now, I know for some people, depending on where you, you know, reside, that may be a more challenging prospect. But at least look and report. Try and figure that out as best you can. But, man, check your policy and procedure. Look online for FMLA. There are resources. And there are even other CALS listeners who have used FMLA successfully for this very thing when they had either family issues or just stress from the job where they were able to use it in a constructive manner. So reach out. It is a resource, and I am super certain there are a lot of victims of white supremacy who, just like a codified software developer just said, are not aware of this resource and other resources that are available to them. That is how the system of white supremacy works. Often there are a lot of resources that would be helpful, or we just don't know about. And we're in a system where they certainly are not going to go out of their way to make sure that this information is available to us. Other folks, much obliged, codified software developer. If we have other folks, if you have either your own situation, that you'd like codified thoughts, suggestion, your own situation that reveals some lessons about racism, or if you have thoughts on what has been discussed thus far, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Again, if we have resume tips, that is appreciated. Pregnancy tips, going to be asking about that, you know, for the foreseeable future. Any other tips on that would definitely be another one. Make sure that you check your policy and procedure with a fine-tooth comb, as they say, with regards to what their policy is, maternal leave, paternal leave, all of that. I would know it backwards and forwards, and that is certainly one. It would be great if you have been observant, if there's been anybody else in that work facility who was pregnant. What kind of accommodations did they make for that person? Did they allow them to maybe get a new seating arrangement? You know, I've been in work environments because that can happen. You know, pregnant females, they might have to go to the bathroom more, and they're in a really difficult, delicate position. So what sort of allocations, what sort of concessions did they make? If there was someone pregnant before, that can be good to know, because you don't know what you might need. You know, you might need to be closer to a bathroom. You might need, you know, some extra time off for checkups, anything. You don't know. always a great, or if you don't, if you haven't been able to witness it yourself, that's another one where if you got that resource person who's been there 10 years, 15 years, ask them what's, you know, how are pregnant ladies been treated since the time they've been here? Do you know, have you seen, you know, anybody here that was pregnant and were they able to get their time off? Okay. How long did they get for maternal leave? All of that. Ask, see how they were treated. That can be really helpful information. Same thing if you're a dad. We talked about that before. You might not be sharing that information, but that might be good to know, just to kind of know what you're in for and to know, oh, these are things, resources that might be available to me. These are advantages that I can take advantage of, or at least things that I should know about going through this process. You've helped out other folks, pregnant people when they were employees and going through this process. You can do the same for me. Other folks dialed in, if you have if you have comments, suggestions, questions to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello, may I be heard?
Greetings, Red in Nevada.
Hello, everyone. Hello, thank you for taking my call. To the female before me, I think that was the codified software developer. I definitely understand as far as giving more tasks and not any more pay. And I have I recently spoke about that at the plantation that I'm currently at. And I've tried to kind of be more observant of what tasks what tasks were assigned to the people who actually got the position that I was basically interning for. And I still didn't see even the time, the short time frame that I was in, the short time frame that I had to quote unquote prove myself that I was worthy of the permanent position. The same people who were given the positions or hired for the positions or whatever, within that same, it was like a 3-week period that I basically had to prove myself from the time of me getting the training to the time of me actually getting the interview for the position. It seemed like within that same time frame, the same tasks or the same like requirements didn't seem like they were the people who actually got hired didn't seem like they actually had to do those same tasks, like whether it was quickly learning how to, do different things on the company's internet or whatever stuff that was particular to that position. I wasn't seeing that. So I just thought that was interesting. So it definitely goes against the whole, if you work really hard or whatever, then, you'll be able to succeed. But I'm not as confused as what I was before, and I'm not as upset. It's just something that happens. But the reason why that I was told that I was taken from the internship so early is because in the old department that I was in, they needed the help because the workload was too much for all the other employees in theirs. The other department that I was in had, 100 plus employees. So within this one day notice that I was taken out of the internship and put back into the other department, I had gotten it was probably about a week or so that I went back to the other department that I got yet another email that my schedule was changing because the internship, I had one schedule. When I was back into the larger department, I had a completely different schedule. And then a week into me being back into the larger department, I got another email saying, well, we need to change people's schedules again. So it's at least this new change, it's a little bit for the better, but, I was actually talking to another, non-white person who also works at the plantation. And we exchange views pretty often, and I was telling them like this plantation, it's really interesting how they will consistently comment or, you know, consistently send out different memos and things like that saying we really want to help employees with a work-life balance when it seems like they're doing anything but. Now, also with the larger department, there was a very large schedule change recently. It was probably like, you know, several months back. And then now we're hearing that it's going to happen again. So it kind of seems like, at least from what, you know, other people have heard or what have you, because the upper management, and by that I mean like the assistant supervisors and the supervisors, they don't necessarily whisper very well. And employees sit very closely or are usually very close to where the supervisors try to have their little gossiping sessions. And so, and even myself hearing about how, you know, all these different changes are supposed to be for the betterment of the company and, you know, to save costs and everything like that. But I'm just not, you know, seeing that. It just seems like it may be causing more stress. But I guess one good thing, I see it as a good thing, maybe other people don't, with some of these new cost-effective changes is that they're lowering the food budget. I spoken like a while back about how this is one of the plantations. This is actually the plantation that has done more food-related activities than any other plantation I've ever been at. Different, like when it goes to like the calendar, if it's pizza day, they have pizza. If it's cake day, they pass out cake, different like horrible things like that. But apparently they're supposed to be cutting that too to cut costs. So I guess that's a good thing, but then it also kind of, it kind of makes you wonder like how much cost are they willing to cut before they then start cutting employees. So that's kind of the limbo that people are in right now. So just trying to keep observant, trying to keep, you know, aware of everything. And the last thing that I'll share is that I was speaking with a Black female that I now sit by in this current, who knows where I'm going to be moved to next week or whatever, but in this current area where I'm at. And you know, instead of talking about politics or anything like that, just kind of talking about different healthcare providers. And so I definitely think that if there is a victim who, whether they seem less confused or not, if you do need to engage them in conversation, maybe even just asking them about, like, you know, what was said on the show already, just about like different healthcare tips and things like that. She actually told me about a Black healthcare provider out here that may seem a little bit better than most of the other healthcare providers that I've been to. I've actually recently went to one, and what I've noticed, which is different in Nevada from Ohio, is that there's a lot more hidden fees, healthcare costs, hidden fees, and the healthcare out here. I've been told that it's really good, but compared to Ohio, it's really horrible. It's under like the health insurance that is provided under companies. It doesn't seem it's all that well. It doesn't, you know, really work that well. You still pay a whole lot of money for one appointment or what have you. So. Just some ideas, you know, should you feel like you need to engage in conversation with other victims. I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Much obliged, Red in Nevada. Drink your water out in the desert. I'm here in Seattle. It was beautiful this week, and I did get the opportunity to do yoga in the park. It was amazing. On the water, no less, it was amazing. But wow, the leaves began changing about 2 weeks ago. I'm looking out, they've changed drastically. Like, you can already feel autumn in the air, but not in the desert, not in Florida, not in the other spots, I'm sure. So you all continue to drink your water. Let's see. That is such a great suggestion. If you have other victims of racism in the workplace, I certainly do not recommend talking about racism, but healthcare providers, hey, or anything else that is constructive information. If they know information that can help you find first class flights for under $100, that would be awesome. If they know information on how you can cut your auto insurance in half, that would be awesome. If you're trying to get roof repairs and they know a black roof repairman who's bonded, get all the certifications and everything, insured, whoopee, and he's going to do it for $1,000 less than the guy I was talking to, the rate that he gave me, spectacular. There are lots of constructive things that you could talk about, and all of that would be way better than gossiping and talking about other employees. That's what I mean, getting that reputation, being someone who is serious about solving problems, constructive, like either we're talking about workplace related things or, yeah, you have great information about healthcare. Let's hear that. Who was the person again? Great. I'll go check them out online. That spectacular. Let's see. The being moved. That's why I ask on a regular basis. I don't think I've ever had one person in all these years dial in and say, oh, yeah, Gus, look at here. This is what you do. I don't ever get my schedule moved around. They don't do any of that, you know, nonsense here. Tell me I'm going to be coming in at 6 a.m. on Tuesday and then 11 p.m. on Thursday. No, I'm going to be consistent, have a regular routine. Like, we've never had anyone call in and say, oh, yeah, got that covered. They're cutting pizza day. When they start cutting donut day, wow, things have gotten serious in the workplace. I always encourage being observant. Gavin DeBecker, we're reading that in the book club. He does too. Being observant, when you notice details about an environment that have changed, this feels a little different, maybe less secure. I don't know. Be mindful of that, both in regards to people, what they're saying directly. I would say that's a big one. If they're cutting pizza day, whew, wow, it is definitely time to be super concerned about what is happening in this here work environment. Context of white supremacy. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see if I can get in some of our other emails. Let's see. Let's see. All right. Codified tech assistant. So we have codified software developer, codified tech assistant. So he writes in, writing in some observation from my time on the education plantation. I've been on the job for a little over a week. I'm a tech assistant. I assist the two campus techs with maintaining the technology on my campus. I was not expecting the amount of attention that I'm getting in my new workplace. I would like to pause right there. I think I said at the very beginning of this here broadcast, Mr. Roden's brother said that that was an advantage of being a black person, is that you get a lot of attention. And I said it has been my experience, my conclusion, really, that is not an advantage, because the attention you get is going to be very niggerized. And that, well, let's keep reading. Let's see. I'm a young black male, so I know I'm under strict surveillance. See, this doesn't sound like an advantage. The two campus techs I work with are also black males. The students are not back on campus yet. We are still prepping for the school year, which will begin shortly. I've done my best to avoid being in classrooms alone with white women teachers, outstanding, and other non-white female teachers. I think that's great, too. White women are dangerous. Period. There are some instances where this couldn't be avoided, like when I was assigned to do a cable retrieval from various classrooms. So I was polite, walked in, introduced myself and explained what I was there for and got the cable as quickly as I could and got out. Another part of my code I've used since I've been here is I try to carry a printout of classrooms I need to go to since I'm new and haven't met all the racist suspects and non-white teachers on the campus yet and show that to them if they question me. All the women, wait a minute, all the women white teachers on the campus, all the women No, I'm young, and it's obvious they're testing me, and I have repeatedly been asked how old I am and have dodged that question by saying, I got to get back to work. Excellent job. And I think that is a skill that is so important. We talk about asking questions. Sometimes you need to be able to not answer a question, and that can be awkward. I mean, we have been trained as victims of white supremacy worldwide, all non-white people. You had better answer a white person when they're talking to you. What's that, boy? Think you're not going to speak to me? I mean, you could, you know, be killed in some instances for not answering, not responding to a white person when they ask you a question. That is a skill. They ask you in a workplace context where, hey, I'm not going to get fired, and this is a question that I do not need to answer, and I don't want to answer it. My counter-racist code says this is a question that I shouldn't answer. What is a technique? What is a strategy for not answering a question? Oh, I got to get back to work now. I think we had some of the other. I don't discuss politics in the workplace. Always good to have that as a strategy. Continuing. I've been mistaken for a student several times since I started. My black male supervisor, who is in a tragic arrangement, cowbell, has warned me to be careful around the female teachers because they will attempt to flirt and do whatever to get the latest gadgets in their classroom. That is so tacky. Like, I was thinking, like, flirt to see if they could get him in trouble or, you know, like, oh my gosh, he's not even being professional or that type of thing. And they're just flirting to get, what are we talking about, an iPad? Like, woo, moving forward. I know the school year hasn't even started, but I still have time to improve my code. We are all still learning. One important thing I have thought about is the best response should a female teacher or student attempt to hug me, because I know it's going to happen sooner or later. The best code I have thought for this is to keep my arms crossed or give them a high five or fist bump, and to keep my hands above my waist and visible at all times. Wow. That I think you can just use your words on that one and say, you know, it's a workplace. I don't, you know, do hugs in the workplace. You can give a handshake. And we even have some listeners say, I don't do any of that. Like, I don't do physical contact in the workplace. You know, we had a lot of allegations and all that. And I'm just trying to be professional, courteous in the workplace. Thank you for your hard work. We're just here to serve the students. I think you can just use your words. I don't think you have to. I think if you just close your arms, they might just hug you anyway. I think we've had some listeners who, you know, said that's what happened to them, that they, you know, tried to do that sort of thing, and they the racist just molested them anyway. So I would, if you do not want to participate in a hug, I would just say that, or figure out, you know, your own verbiage that accomplishes the same result, so that that's understood. You're not participating in hugs, and, you know, let's get back. Does your computer working? Okay, all right, well, I'll catch you down the road. yeah, that's all. I would just use my words to say that, and then stick to that. That's just dangerous. You've been on the job this short a time, and that's already something that a bit of information that has that you've concluded about the workplace, or that you've been able to ascertain, or that you've been told, because I think he said that they told him that they will flirt. Let me make sure I read it correctly. I think he said somebody told him that they will flirt just to get that. Yeah, there it is. Okay. Yeah, he said he was warned. He said he warned him to be careful. His supervisor, who has a white wife, warned him. So within less than a month of being on the job, you have been warned about flirting white women. That is from a black male who's in a tragic arrangement. That is enormous. I would have in that sort of environment, and it's been my experience, if we're talking about like classroom settings, we're talking about that in comparison to a construction site or a 9-to-5. Let's say you work in D.C., federal office building. The school environment is going to be much more lax generally speaking, in terms of attire. Most people are generally not going to be coming there in a suit and tie every day, or their power, you know, suit and heels every day. If you're working at a class, generally speaking, in a classroom setting, and the physical contact as well. It's very common because the students are hugging one another, and sometimes they're dating each other, and the students and the professors, sometimes they're dating the professors and all that. So it can be a lot of physical touching in that environment. I would just make a strict code about it. And I think we had somebody, an educator, who talked about that before, about just having a set code about that, that I don't do any, you know, touching. And I would say it just that way, too. I don't do any touching with students, faculty, staff. I just try to be professional, courteous. Everybody doing a good job to serve the students, here to help them learn. I would just say it. Folks have a better way of presenting or dealing with that to make sure it doesn't happen. Feel free. The rest of it, I would just continue to, I'm sure you will make adjustments with your code once the students arrive, because that might, you know, add some different wrinkles. I don't know if you'll have to deal with the student population or if you'll just be restricted to doing work in the classrooms. And then if individual educators have problems that you need to address, but continue to update your code, and I would take that seriously if you've been warned that quickly about the flirting. And I might even, that would be something that would have to be documented, because if I verbalize, no touching, I don't do any physical contact, just trying to be professional, blah, 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 whatever, however you say it. From that point on, once it's known, shouldn't be any touching. From that point on, whoa, this is an incident anytime that I'm touched in the workplace, because I've already made it clear, explicit, no physical contact, just here to work, get things done professionally. Stop that. That would have to be my code if someone has said that to me. This is not even just my observation, and, you know, I could be paranoid and all that. Someone has already told me this, and the person that told me this is married to a white person. So it's not like, I don't know, maybe that's how he ended up in that situation. I don't know. But to be told this by an employee, wow, you all are really dangerous about that. I'm going to be overprotective to make sure that nothing happens in that regard.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter?
Yes, sir. To this non-white person who I think has stated that he is quote-unquote young, I think what he has to his advantage is there's a long history of issues and problems through flirting or hugging, especially in the workplace of quote unquote education. I mean, even from the standpoint of movies concerned, To Serve with Love, and that was one of the major factors in the movie itself, and that was back in the 1960s. And certainly now with the press and different viral instances of that negative type of activity going on in the workplace and in education, it would be easy for him to speak directly to the point with students and or employees on the subject matter, because certainly by now, before he was born, the issue has been quite open. It's been quite you know, repetitive as far as from my point of view, about problems existing with employees in education, as well as the students, you know, as far as they're concerned. You probably have less problems with the males, but females, you know, as far as they're concerned, to, you know, just state that from day one, my name is so-and-so, and one of the first things that he either places up on the board or tells the students directly is, I do not engage into close physical contact like hugging. I wouldn't mind professionally shaking your hand in a professional manner, even in a manner that's
cultural, like a fist bump or, you know, different type of handshakes. But outside of that, we're not going to engage in that type of activity because, you know, primarily this is the institution where we are sharing information and we are learning from each other. And we're going to, in order to maximize that, we would have to stay away from those type of actions, you know, sort of. So I'm just giving an example, that sort of thing. As I mentioned before, the issues on that subject matter has long been before he even probably even thought about teaching. And so it from that standpoint, it'd be easier for him to be able to explain that to reasonable students and employees. Now, if someone still goes behind that and insists upon, then you already know that person has a problem. That person has a problem, and you go from the standpoint of getting distance from that person, calling in a parent-teacher meeting with that, if it's a student, you know, as far as that concern, and go through your steps with that, and that would basically address the situation directly if it's a student. Employee-wise, there's a thing that you do also with another employee as far as they're concerned. Go through the policy and procedures with that. But that's basically how I would handle that. I went to college to be a teacher, but I only did it for about maybe 2 weeks before I resigned and went with the fire department. Thank you.
How about that? Retired firefighter, could have been retired educator. Much obliged. Let's see. That cut it off at the knees. That's what Walter Beach said. Cut it off at the knees. Use your words. Be explicit about it. Same thing retired firefighter said. I think that's the best course of action for that with students and faculty. Make it explicit. And that'd be beautiful because you just started. So that can be the foundation is set. You don't have any history of hugging and kissing on everybody that works there. So it won't be like, oh, my gosh, what do you mean? We've been won't be any of that. We can start fresh, no touching. And, man, then it won't be a surprise. Oh, that's just, you know, he's courteous. That's just his way of doing business. You know, no still touching. And that way, everybody who moots you from now forward, bang, that'll be the way that it is. No touching. I think that's great. The school year starting and we're right in the middle of Me Too. You can even weave that in. We've had all this Jeffrey Epstein. Aren't they suing? Come on. Let's be professional. Let's minimize all that. We don't need to do any of that. I'm just here to make sure that your gadget is working. Thank you kindly.
Yeah. The students are not ignorant to that, you know, it's, you know, so you go right to it. You know, let's say if it's a young female that's after everybody is left out of the class and she wants to stay in the class to do, you know, I mean, that's, you know, that's something that is actually the planned situation. And you have to, as that professional, you have to cut that right off right away. You know, I mean, of course, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be discourteous about it. You know, curse her out and say, get the hell out of here or something like that. But it would be firm. It would be pretty firm, you know, as far as that concern. And then quickly, the next step would be something with an administrator, myself, that child's parent, or whoever, where they stay at. You know, it may not be a direct parent biologically, but whoever that person would be, very quickly. That's it. Thank you.
Context of white supremacy. There you go. School year is starting. Important to have a code around that too. Let's see. Other folks, number again, do not wait till the last minute. If you have a question, if you have suggestions, if you have thoughts on anything that has been shared during the broadcast, number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Other folks dialed in, if you have a hand up, comments, suggestions you would like to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I want to start out with the first observation I've had this week. And actually, I've been noticing this for months now, a lot of the documents for deeds and restrictions is usually connected to like a legal description, where I would see a lot of the term plantation on, you know, like they're actually the name of a lot of neighborhoods and subdivision areas. Going back is like 1890 and 1925 and in those areas. And some of them, they would try to change their name, but we still have what's called Hale Plantation, what they call a so-called wealthy area. So that term plantation, I've been noticing a lot. My second one is the black female victim. She made another comment about, I guess, about a white woman being able to be at the front counter and, I guess, clip her nails or whatever. So she was like, you know what, when I grow up, I want to be like such and such, because she gets to sit up there and clip her toenails. I mean, not her toenails, but her fingernails. I'm like, why would, like, when I grow up, you know, like, I guess she's calling herself a child. She might not realize it. Maybe it's some kind of slang. So that was another one. The next one is, there was a situation where the supervisor came out and she asked the white woman, are you finished with your batch? And she's like, oh, no, well, you can go ahead and take it or whatever. Or she offered to finish it up. And the white woman responds saying, oh, sure, you can go ahead and do it. Then the black female says, oh, I have some in my batch left, too. It's only about three or four of them. And then the supervisor, she kind of just, she pauses, and then she says something about, I thought that, and then she just went quiet, and then she turned around and left. So she, okay, like either her or two other females were asked about this white woman's batch that they're doing on the, for work, for indexing or whatever. It's a type of job task they do. But when the black female suggested, I have some in my batch too, it didn't seem like they were wanting to help her. So I haven't seen that one again, but I wanted to report that particular one. My fourth one is on the meeting a couple weeks ago, I noticed that the supervisor, once again, she had a postcard or some kind of card in her hand. And it looked like she was trying not to say research again. All right. So it was still kind of tacky, cause she was naming the white people, and then she got to my name and then said, oh man, and Blink over here, he's like a workaholic. He gets three done in a day. You know, I just don't know how he does it. And then she didn't even get a chance to finish. And then everybody starts applauding. Now, the whole work staff in the meeting didn't applaud until they got to my name. So she didn't even get to finish. Then she went to mentioning other names after my name, and then everybody stopped clapping. So, I paid close attention to that. And my next one is, a conversation took place about me being a so-called gentlemen or whatever, because I try to open the door for the black females. And then there's times where the white women are slide through too. And, you know, the black female saying, you know, he's a gentleman. He'll always open the door for me. So, and then, so the white woman says, yeah, you know what? You are a good guy and this and that, and try to give me these fake compliments. And then when they're done talking about that, they go to start talking about the black male janitor. Say, hey, you know, when are we going to get this thing started? I guess they were talking about that petition thing again, about trying to get either some signatures or trying to go to the boss to get him to put in a word to the supervisor of the janitor, the maintenance guy. So I'm like, that's interesting that they go from talking about me to talking about the janitor guy. All right. I got three more. I was in the hallway on a break. And a white female supervisor, she walks past black female that usually does the office supplies every Wednesday. So she walks past, and I can hear her down the hallway, and she says, oh, you still ain't get your liquor license yet? Because she has like a stand where she pretty much gives out the office supplies, like staples, you know, sticky notes, scissors, pens, etc. And I didn't hear what the response was to it. And then she says, I got five on it. All right. And then she walks out of the building. So I said, I'm going to have to jot that one down. The second to the last one is when I'm driving a Jeep, or if I'm not driving it, it's a white female that does the cashiering. She'll come over and get the key to go to the bank or whatever. So I gave her the key, and then when she was coming back, she stops like maybe 5 or 6 feet away from the desk that I've been assigned, and she attempts to try to toss the key. So I said, no, no, you come here and hand me the key. Don't toss me anything. So she started, you know, giggling or whatever, you know. And I was being serious, so I just said, thank you. And my last one is, when we were leaving the courthouse at the 5, there's two different levels of doors that you have to leave to exit the building. I was holding the door open for some black females once again. And a white man was behind me, a coworker. He opened the first door, and I opened the second door, and they were walking out. There was two black females and a white woman. So we're walking out. They go first, and then we're walking behind them. So he walks a little bit ahead of me, and he said, man, you know what? I had to really restrain myself not to trip anyone. It's hard to do, but, you know, I had to restrain myself. It's very difficult. And then, you know, they were all laughing. So I just said, yeah, don't do that. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Woo! That was another moment where I was glad I was muted. Wow. Does this fella who had to work really hard to restrain himself from tripping, he is an employee at the courthouse. He was not coming, you know, to get a deed checked or get a passport. He's actual employee.
Yes, sir.
Wow. The courthouse in Florida, prime illustration of white terrorism. One more. The suspected racist white woman who was going to toss the keys. Why did you think it was important to halt that process and have her hand you the keys?
Because I thought that she was going to get comfortable in doing that. And then another thing, I thought she was treating me like an animal, like, well, to use the metaphor, but she was tossing it like I'm some kind of dog. That's what I was thinking. And I just thought it was just her practicing racism. When I handed her the keys, all you got to do is just come hand them back to me.
Love it. That is so, I think it's so important. And I'll tell you, I think I've shared this on the program before. We've been a decade. I think I've shared this before. I don't like repeating, but I'll share it again just because I did think of it this week. This was, I lived in California. I was working. We were in training, just started the job. We had like a 2-week training before we actually got on the job. In the training session, they had like athletic equipment. There was a basketball court outside the facility. So they had like a basketball, a frisbee, you know, athletic stuff. They had like a Nerf football inside. And so we would take breaks and stuff. And so sometimes we would throw the football around, or I think we went outside a few times and threw the frisbee or whatever. Anyway, one of the white men, racist suspects, who's leading the training, he participates. He joins in as we're throwing the Nerf football around during the break. We get to one point where I threw him the football and I had to stop. There was a person, everyone, I mean, it's like, you know, more than a dozen people. It's a lot of folks here for the training. So not everybody is participating in, you know, the foolishness with the football. There was another trainee. She was sitting down next to where we were throwing the ball. She's not participating in this at all. She had asked me something. So I turned and I'm talking to her. I'm not facing the football activity at all. Now I'm talking to her. The suspected race soldier throws the ball and hits me in my face while I'm turned and talking to her. I'm clearly not in the Nerf thing. I'm having a conversation with her about, you know, something job related, whatever we're talking about. And so he offers a tacky apology later, like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't, you know, that was messed up. I thought you were still in. When I'm clear, whole body, you know, is turned while I'm in dialogue. I bring that up to say I thought something was incorrect about it at the time. I was not into racism, white supremacy, studying it seriously at all. I hadn't read Mr. Fuller's book or, you know, any of that. If I was codified, I say that sometimes you can just look at your own work experience, you know, when you were more confused and then, you know, how you function now. I would not have participated in that at all. Like, we're here for training. I'm not horsing around in any way, shape, form. And it opens opportunities for things like that. And I bring that up with the key situation. In your explanation, you said, I didn't want her to get comfortable with that. That easily could be the type of situation where one day I'm working. We're not in an athletic. This is not horseshoes. And she comes in and, oh my goodness, I can't believe I jabbed your eyeball out. I thought you, oh my God, someone call and we've killed him. Like, come on, come on. I got the keys from you by walking over. You did not throw them across the room. I'm not a wide receiver. I'm not Antonio Brown. Put them in my hand. I will walk them back and give them, or hang them up wherever they're supposed to be at. Just basic office protocol. That's what we want to be about. Every time, it's been my experience, once it deviates outside of that, oh man, given opportunities for white supremacy, racism to flourish. Let's see. With the black female victim, when she made the comment about when I grow up, I want to be able to, you know, clip my nails at the desk. That is kind of a cliche saying. I've heard that one quite a bit in my life and travels. It may have been, and this why I say with those metaphors too, you know, maybe you interpret the way the person meant, maybe you don't. It may have been, wow, this white woman is so grown. We're at the courthouse and she can sit up and clip her nails at the front desk. Like, wow, I don't even feel like I can do that. That's the way I was kind of processing it. Like, wow, I wouldn't even feel that I could do that without being written up, or this is going to be something that'll be on my performance evaluation. Like, you know, we were thinking about giving you a promotion, but then we came out and saw you clipping your nails up at the front desk and thought that was about the most unprofessional thing ever. So, you know, we reneged. We changed our mind about giving you that promotion. Clip your nails in the bathroom, or, you know, someplace where people who have some common sense do. So that was my thinking, is what she may have been trying to convey, but I don't know. Let's see. The plantation, always appreciate the markers of white supremacy. I always encourage or try to encourage folks to learn local national, global history, especially local. You're right there. Beautiful illustration right there. Why are all of these spots plantation? This well-to-do neighborhood plantation. Negros. Fortune in the Negros. Let's see. The whole work, or I guess this is another one. White people giving attention to black people in the workplace. Now they go around and talking about, you know, how much work people have done, and they get to you. A workaholic. Interesting, you know, choice of terms. And he's completed three bachelors. And they get the whole room to stand and give an ovation. That is, wow. It can't just be as opposed to the applause. Is it possible that we can just keep from setting my water on the floor? Thank you. And then we can move on to the next person. I mean, the tacky, the histrionics, they love that. They will go through all of that, and we can't even do the basics in how we function in the workplace. Let's see. But the attention, I'm always suspicious. That doesn't sound like one either. That would be great. Unless I'm going to get a raise from all this. Unless we're going to have, you know, video and audio recording that I received a standing ovation at the courthouse in August of 2019. And, you know, that should count towards me getting a 20% increase in my salary. Extra week of vacation, paid vacation. Let's see. The gentleman comment, that put that in the same category. And that even reminded me, he said, I try to hold the door open for the black females who come in, and the white women slip in right behind, like, oh, yes, we'll get in too. Reminded me of the race where folks are talking about, where it becomes a competition of sorts at the door. And that you just, I've heard the same sort of thing. This is a pattern of behavior. And they go from, what a gentleman he is. Did you see? He held the door open. What he does is every, what a gentleman. Make sure we don't set his water on the floor anymore. And they move from that. Now, we got this starving Negro over here in the corner, and we are going to make him take this food basket. Where is that petition at? We've been talking about this. That right there, it can't just be in a system of racism that we could just be comfortable with a black person. We give him his compliment and we move forward. We are much more comfortable getting back to, we got a starving Negro janitor, much less over here. We're going to force feed him. We're going to do whatever we need to do. This is a major problem that needs. Yeah, we got the gentleman Negro over here, but back to our starving Negro project in the corner. The liquor license one, I'm not quite sure. It sounded like it could have been some sort of tacky joke. I'm always curious anytime I hear phrasing that is stereotypically associated with black people, especially in a workplace context, because it's so, what are you doing talking about you got five on it and all that in a courthouse? Like, that's, what does that have to do with people that are coming in and trying to get a passport photo? Like, you know, that's why I would have a serious eyebrow raise, but I don't know. We missed the punchline. I feel like we missed an important sentence or two to put everything together, but it's definitely in the suspect category. Wow. The Florida courthouse, PhD in white supremacy, racism. Any other folks, questions, thoughts, suggestions based on what they heard this evening, their own experience they want to make sure they share with us before we get ready to wrap up?
Can I be heard?
Codified software developer. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I just wanted to say to the gentleman at the Florida courthouse, I really appreciated your emotional response pattern recognition, I guess theory or concept. I've been paying attention to that, and I've been noticing that with even myself, but with other non-white people. They'd be very attentive to how white people try to get you to respond in ways. Lately, it's been white validation, but I'm trying to learn. I'm learning or teaching myself how to turn that, as you say, Gus, to that white chip off when I hear white validation, and really, really paying attention to it. So thank you for that. Just wanted to share that.
Much obliged. A lot of workplace racism can be self-study, just in seeing how we observe and our different responses to situations, things that happen to us in the workplace. We can learn a lot about ourselves and even begin to recondition our own behaviors, paying attention to some of those responses, being more mindful. Say that managing our emotions. I say that in the written description for almost every workplace racism broadcast, but just being more mindful, thoughts, speech, conduct, emotions in the workplace. That is what we are striving to do. Any other suggestions, thoughts? Folks want to make sure they contribute last couple minutes of the broadcast. We'll be here on Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific. The weekly compensatory call-in will review what has transpired over the last 7 days. School is about to start. I just saw a report today. It was about an hour or so before we went on air in Arkansas, one of the few states I have not traveled to. They had a white woman. She pulled a firearm on a group of black children. I think they were like 14, 15 years old. They were doing a fun. It's not funny. My apologies. Not funny. They were doing a fundraiser to, you know, raise a few nickels for their high school. And she pulled a firearm on them, had them on the ground face down at gunpoint until the enforcement officials arrived and said, oh, these are just children out doing a fundraiser. They arrested her. I forgot the charges. There's no mugshot of this woman. Her name is Jerry Kelly, J-E-R-R-I, Kelly. There's no mugshot because they said she came down with medical difficulties. So they were not able to do a mugshot of Miss Kelly, who, it just so happens, in addition to being classified as white, they said so in the report specifically. I always appreciated when they identified, no guesswork, identified her as someone classified as white and the wife of the county jail administrator, or at least one of the county jail administrators. Maybe they have multiple. There was speculation that maybe that contributed to the malfunction with the mugshot and her treatment after this incident. But yeah, new school year. Make sure you're talking to your children about racism, white supremacy, and the dangers that await from white women and white men, white children, all of the above. Anyone classified as white, really. But we'll be here tomorrow. Compensatory call-in should be here on Monday. White male professor Jason Miller. We talked about his report on some of the alleged sexual misconduct of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He should be here Monday, 5 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific. Anything else before we wrap up? Everybody satisfied? Last check-in before we get ready to close things out. We'll assume everybody is grand, much obliged for your participation. Hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. We'll be on tomorrow. If you have additional suggestions, thoughts, you can feel free. Drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. We will continue with our pregnancy questions. Thinking. Folks should be thinking. What do you think would be helpful tidbits if you're going through a pregnancy? You're going to be working for at least some of it. What are things you should do, not do, things you're going to be talking about, words you would put together so that you can manage conversations. And as I think I mentioned it earlier, this broadcast, figuring out your code for when the question comes up and you're not interested in divulging that information, whammo, you've already thought about how you want to go through that process as well. But all very important to think about. We'll continue to add on to that as we proceed. Thank you again to everyone who contributed, emailed in, dialed, live, archive. Much obliged. Hope it was worthy of your time and energy. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Let's keep our brain computers working at the highest efficiency possible. You can be out selling gift cards. That's what they were selling. Not ammunition, not slingshots, not rifles, cards. Ended up being at gunpoint. You do not want to be intoxicated in this sort of environment where you might have to make a life-saving decision at any moment. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, driver, or passenger. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That includes not being on the cell phone if you are behind the wheel. Everything that we can, just trying to minimize problems, contact with race soldiers. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.